Blog Talk Radio.
Protests against the repressive regime of Bashar al-Assad has turned into a brutal civil war. Over 100,000 people have been killed. Millions have fled the country. In that time, America has worked with allies to provide humanitarian support, to help the moderate opposition, and to shape a political settlement. But I have resisted calls for military action because we cannot resolve someone else's civil war through force, particularly after a decade of war in Iraq and Afghanistan. The situation profoundly changed, though, on August 21st, when Assad's government gassed to death over 1,000 people, including hundreds of children. The images from this massacre are sickening. Men, women, children lying in rows killed by poison gas, others foaming at the mouth, gasping for breath, a father clutching his dead children, imploring them to get up and walk. On that terrible night, the world saw in gruesome detail the terrible nature of chemical weapons and why the overwhelming majority of humanity has declared them off limits, a crime against humanity, and a violation of the laws of war. This was not always the case. In World War I, American GIs were among the many thousands killed by deadly gas in the trenches of Europe. In World War II, the Nazis used gas to inflict the horror of the Holocaust. Because these weapons can kill on a mass scale, with no distinction between soldier and infant, the civilized world has spent a century working to ban them. And in 1997, the United States Senate overwhelmingly approved an international agreement prohibiting the use of chemical weapons, now joined by 189 governments that represent 98% of humanity. On August 21st, these basic rules were violated, along with our sense of common humanity. No one disputes that chemical weapons were used in Syria. The world saw thousands of videos, cell phone pictures, and social media accounts from the attack. And humanitarian organizations told stories of hospitals packed with people who had symptoms of poison gas. Moreover, we know the Assad regime was responsible. In In the days leading up to August 21st, we know that Assad's chemical weapons personnel prepared for an attack near an area where they mix sarin gas. They distributed gas masks to their troops. Then they fired rockets from a regime-controlled area into 11 neighborhoods that the regime has been trying to wipe clear of opposition forces. Shortly after those rockets landed, the gas spread, and hospitals filled with the dying and the wounded. We know senior figures in Assad's military machine reviewed the results of the attack, and the regime increased their shelling of the same neighborhoods in the days that followed. We've also studied samples of blood and hair from people at the site that tested positive for sarin. When dictators commit atrocities, they depend upon the world to look the other way until those horrifying pictures fade from memory. But these things happened. The facts cannot be denied. The question now is what the United States of America and the international community is prepared to do about it. Because what happened to those people, to those children, is not only a violation of international law, it's also a danger to our security. Let me explain why. If we fail to act, the Assad regime will see no reason to stop using chemical weapons. As the ban against these weapons erodes, other tyrants will have no reason to think twice about acquiring poison gas and using them. Over time, our troops would again face the prospect of chemical warfare on the battlefield, and it could be easier for terrorist organizations to obtain these weapons and to use them to attack civilians. If fighting spills beyond Syria's borders, these weapons could threaten allies like Turkey, Jordan, and Israel. And a failure to stand against the use of chemical weapons would weaken prohibitions against other weapons of mass destruction and embolden Assad's ally, Iran, which must decide whether to ignore international law by building a nuclear weapon or to take a more peaceful path. This is not a world we should accept. This is what's at stake. And that is why, after careful deliberation, I determined that it is in the national security interests of the United States to respond to the Assad regime's use of chemical weapons through a targeted military strike. The purpose of this strike would be to deter Assad from using chemical weapons, to degrade his regime's ability to use them, and to make clear to the world that we will not tolerate their use. That's my judgment as Commander-in-Chief. But I'm also the president of the world's oldest constitutional democracy. So even though I possess the authority to order military strikes, I believed it was right, in the absence of a direct or imminent threat to our security, to take this debate to Congress. I believe our democracy is stronger when the president acts with the support of Congress. And I believe that America acts more effectively abroad when we stand together. This is especially true after a decade that put more and more war-making power in the hands of the president and more burdens on the shoulders of our troops while sidelining the people's representatives from the critical decisions about when we use force. Now, I know that after the terrible toll of Iraq and Afghanistan, the idea of any military action, no matter how limited, is not going to be popular. After all, I've spent 4.5 years working to end wars, not to start them. Our troops are out of Iraq. Our troops are coming home from Afghanistan. And I know Americans want all of us in Washington, especially me, to concentrate on the task of building our nation here at home, putting people back to work, educating our kids, growing our middle class. It's no wonder, then, that you're asking hard questions. So let me answer some of the most important questions that I've heard from members of Congress and that I've read in letters that you've sent to me. First, many of you have asked, won't this put us on a slippery slope to another war? One man wrote to me that we are still recovering from our involvement in Iraq. A veteran put it more bluntly, this nation is sick and tired of war. My answer is simple. I will not put American boots on the ground in Syria. I will not pursue an open-ended action like Iraq or Afghanistan. I will not pursue a prolonged air campaign like Libya or Kosovo. This would be a targeted strike to achieve a clear objective, deterring the use of chemical weapons and degrading Assad's capabilities. Others have asked whether it's worth acting if we don't take out Assad. As some members of Congress have said, there's no point in simply doing a pinprick strike in Syria. Let me make something clear. The United States military doesn't do pinpricks. Even a limited strike will send a message to Assad that no other nation can deliver. I don't think we should remove another dictator with force. We learned from Iraq that doing so makes us responsible for all that comes next. But a targeted strike can make Assad or any other dictator think twice before using chemical weapons. Other questions involve the dangers of retaliation. We don't dismiss any threats, but the Assad regime does not have the ability to seriously threaten our military. Any other retaliation they might seek is in line with threats that we face every day. Neither Assad nor his allies have any interest in escalation that would lead to his demise. And our ally Israel can defend itself with overwhelming force, as well as the unshakable support of the United States of America. Many of you have asked a broader question. Why should we get involved at all in a place that's so complicated and where, as one person wrote to me, those who come after Assad may be enemies of human rights? It's true that some of Assad's opponents are extremists, but Al-Qaeda will only draw strength in a more chaotic Syria if people there see the world doing nothing to prevent innocent civilians from being gassed to death. The majority of the Syrian people and the Syrian opposition we work with just want to live in peace, with dignity and freedom. And the day after any military action, we would redouble our efforts to achieve a political solution that strengthens those who reject the forces of tyranny and extremism. Finally, many of you have asked, why not leave this to other countries or seek solutions short of force? As several people wrote to me, we should not be the world's policemen. I agree, and I have a deeply held preference for peaceful solutions. Over the last 2 years, my administration has tried diplomacy and sanctions, warnings and negotiations, but chemical weapons were still used by the Assad regime. However, over the last few days, we've seen some encouraging signs. In part because of the credible threat of U.S. military action, as well as constructive talks that I had with President Putin, the Russian government has indicated a willingness to join with the international community in pushing Assad to give up his chemical weapons. The Assad regime has now admitted that it has these weapons, and even said they joined the Chemical Weapons Convention, which prohibits their use. It's too early to tell whether this offer will succeed. And any agreement must verify that the Assad regime keeps its commitments. But this initiative has the potential to remove the threat of chemical weapons without the use of force, particularly because Russia is one of Assad's strongest allies. I have therefore asked the leaders of Congress to postpone a vote to authorize the use of force while we pursue this diplomatic path. I'm sending Secretary of State John Kerry to meet his Russian counterpart on Thursday. And I will continue my own discussions with President Putin. I've spoken to the leaders of two of our closest allies, France and the United Kingdom, and we will work together in consultation with Russia and China to put forward a resolution at the UN Security Council requiring Assad to give up his chemical weapons and to ultimately destroy them under international control. We'll also give UN inspectors the opportunity to report their findings about what happened on August 21st. And we will continue to rally support from allies, from Europe to the Americas, from Asia to the Middle East, who agree on the need for action. Meanwhile, I've ordered our military to maintain their current posture, to keep the pressure on Assad, and to be in a position to respond if diplomacy fails. And tonight I give thanks again to our military and their families for their incredible strength and sacrifices. my fellow Americans, for nearly seven decades, the United States has been the anchor of global security. This has meant doing more than forging international agreements. It has meant enforcing them. The burdens of leadership are often heavy, but the world's a better place because we have borne them. And so, to my friends on the right, I ask you to reconcile your commitment to America's military might with a failure to act when a cause is so plainly just. To my friends on the left, I ask you to reconcile your belief in freedom and dignity for all people with those images of children writhing in pain and going still on a cold hospital floor. For sometimes resolutions and statements of condemnation are simply not enough. Indeed, I'd ask every member of Congress and those of you watching at home tonight to view those videos of the attack and then ask, what kind of world will we live in if the United States of America sees a dictator brazenly violate international law with poison gas and we choose to look the other way? Franklin Roosevelt once said, our national determination to keep free of foreign wars and foreign entanglements cannot prevent us from feeling deep concern when ideals and principles that we have cherished are challenged. Our ideals and principles, as well as our national security, are at stake in Syria, along with our leadership of a world where we seek to ensure that the worst weapons will never be used. America is not the world's policeman. Terrible things happen across the globe, and it is beyond our means to right every wrong. But when, with modest effort and risk, we can stop children from being gassed to death and thereby make our own children safer over the long run, I believe we should act. That's what makes America different. That's what makes us exceptional. With humility, but with resolve, let us never lose sight of that essential truth. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
Ralph Waldo Emerson once said, what lies behind and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. Good afternoon. This is Friday, September the 13th, 2013. Friday the 13th. And this is The Last Word. And I am Michael Lawson, along with Thomas Fortenberry. How are you, Thomas?
How are you, sir? I'm pretty proud of our president. I think he did a rather masterful stroke internationally and nationally, especially the national part. Because, you know, we've got gridlock in the UN and gridlock in the Congress. But he, I think, played all parties off each other and actually accomplished something fantastic.
Let me let you hear what President Bush said about Syria in March 17th, 2003.
Either you're with us, either you love freedom and with nations which embrace freedom, or you're with the enemy.
Either with us or against us.
Well, here's something else he said.
We are now acting because the risks of inaction would be far greater. In 1 year or 5 years, the power of Iraq to inflict harm on all free nations would be multiplied many times over in this century. When evil men plot chemical, biological, and nuclear terror, a policy of appeasement could bring destruction of a kind never before seen on this earth.
The risk of not acting is greater than the risk of acting. If we don't take a stand here today, I guarantee you we are more likely to face far greater risks to our security and a far greater likelihood of conflict that demands our action in the future.
Now, you see the contrast. all these guys on the right who had never seen a gun. That includes Bush Jr. All they talk about is fighting. Our president, President Barack Obama, came into office to get us out of wars. Not to get us into another war. Not to turn the cheek and let the person slap us. He said, get us out of wars, and then we stand our ground. You ever hear about that, Florida? Stand your ground? Well, we're not going to let anybody slap us in the face. But you know, we are the strongest nation on earth. And as Teddy Roosevelt said, walk softly and carry a big freaking stick.
Yep. That's one thing that I love that, you know, Obama did. He actually said directly, if you listen to that speech, he made no doubt. If you really want to go there, we'll finish everything. And, you know, there's nothing you can do that would even come close to us. And that's the truth. But here's the difference. No bluster. There's no running around. There's no color-coded alerts. There's no bumper
stickers. Directly.
You know, he isn't standing on the deck of an aircraft carrier with a flag behind him.
Oh, yeah.
But what he actually accomplished something. And even though liberals didn't like it, the threat of force actually
is
force.
But you see, why don't these people like it?
Well,
I mean, you're not supposed to say, oh, slap me, beat me, hit me. Hopefully, you're not the biggest person in the world. Slap me, beat me. What are you kidding?
No, none of that. But here's the thing.
But that's what they're saying.
Some of them, no. Some liberals didn't want any war for any reason. Now, ultra-liberals want only just war to stop either atrocities, you know, genocides, or...
That's an ultra-liberal? I thought that would be the other.
Well, no, those are the ones that want it for to end all bad things.
Right.
Were the ones that were saying, well, this might be a just war because he has chemical weapons. But either way, nobody wanted a new war, and I thought he handled it well because the threat of war actually did force Assad's side to the table. You know, because they were sitting around just going, we don't care.
And they have never admitted they had chemical weapons.
Right.
Until a gun was cocked to their head. And now, oh, yeah, well, we want to join the peace negotiations at the UN. They sent a letter.
And they suddenly joined the
chemical
weapons ban, the convention.
It says here, it was just from Beirut, President Bashar Assad says Syria will start submitting data on its chemical weapons stockpiles a month after signing the convention banning such weapons. 3 months ago,
he didn't have
any weapons. Where'd he get them from? Oh,
exactly.
That's all the weapons that were sent that Saddam Hussein had. Is that what they're trying to say now?
And let me mention something else, because this has been in the news a lot lately, too, because of these yahoos. Well, not in the news. Let me correct that. In the faux news.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, these right-wingers have been running around with their And by the way, Colbert did a perfect send-up of them the other night with the Super Reagan.
I was going to record that, and I didn't get a chance.
Yes, sir. I've got it on here. I could even play it on here if you want. But anyway, Bill O'Reilly and all them have been saying, you know, that Reagan would have done this, Reagan would have done that. You know, they bring up this, and he says they have a unconditional, unique ability to bring up Super Reagan and know what he would do.
He's only dead.
You know, he said they're hypothetical contemporary Super Reagan that they bring out like a superhero.
Yeah,
but
well,
here's the thing.
Yeah.
Let's not take hypotheticals of what he would do today. Let's see what he did.
How many years ago was that? I mean, did I even have hair on my face when Reagan was president? What
people
are we
forget
about?
There was not only a threat from Syria. That's crude, but there were Marines blown into the Mediterranean Sea from Syria. Now, what did Reagan.
Wasn't that in Beirut?
Super Reagan, dude.
The Marines.
Yes.
276
entire
Marines.
Entire barracks.
Killed because they couldn't even load their weapons in their rifles?
Now, so to play the game, Reagan had sent in everybody unarmed just to have, you know, be say that he's doing something, deploying troops, and I've got men on the ground. You know, that was the boots on the ground approach. But again, like you said, they weren't even armed. They were just standing around, living in barracks, just there as a presence.
As a
that would be a
target practice.
Right. And that's what they became.
That's
literally.
Right.
They blew the entire thing out, like, you know, shades of Oklahoma City, blew the entire building out, killed all of these guys. And what did Super Reagan do?
Ran.
That's what people don't. And I didn't say
ran to his ranch.
I said
in California.
He withdrew completely. Not a little bit. Our boats were gone. Our troops were gone. Our Air Force was gone. Everything. We withdrew from there and never went back. And it was so bad that it was kind of election time. That's kind of why we ended up with, like, little things like, you know, Grenada.
Absolutely. Because
I
got to hit somebody. Let me hit this little guy over here.
And that's why eventually his big comeback to the Middle East was he fired a, you know, missile remote controlled at Libya.
At Libya, right.
And,
trying to hit,
Gaddafi,
who wasn't even in the tent.
Yeah.
Well, let me hear you. Just tell you how big and bad these guys are. This is Karl Rover. Rover, the Nazi. Let me hear what he first said about Syria.
I thought that we needed to take it to Congress, but in retrospect, that was a mistake. The president probably should have been better to take an action. This is an unmitigated disaster. It's an amateur hour at the White House.
Get out of the White House. Let me play, which I played this reverse. This is what he first said.
The toughest question for the president is going to be this one, Bill. Does he ask for congressional authorization for his action?
I think he
does, too. The president cannot do what he did in Libya, not go to the Congress.
He has to go to Congress.
And he'll get it.
That was on Riley's show. He said, no, the president don't need no congressional approval. He can go right to Libya. And then less than a month later, he's saying, you know what? In retrospect, he shouldn't have went. Well, in retrospect, you couldn't have pulled those missiles back. Mm-hmm. Once they're gone from the ship, once they're gone from the submarine, they are gone.
Yeah.
So these guys, they want both sides of the fracking fence.
Yeah. Here's the deal with these guys. You know, they hate Obama so much.
Oh, yeah.
They just want him to fail. So they're hoping that he'll shoot the missiles off and blow up some children or something.
Absolutely. We can take pictures
or
of
that he doesn't do anything, and then they go, look, he's a wimp.
Right.
He didn't do it, you know.
Well,
but here's what he really did.
Yeah.
We put entire fleet parked off the coast.
Four cruisers and an aircraft carrier that has
and
a big 80 aircraft on it.
People don't talk about it, but we still have all
and that
people.
And that means submarines are there, because aircraft carriers don't go anywhere.
Iraq, we've got the whole Persian Gulf full of stuff, and we got all those bases in Turkey, which, you know, check a map.
And Turkey don't like Syria anyway.
Right on the border.
Right.
So we are sitting there literally surrounding them. He moved all of that in place first and then said, hey, you know, start talking to me, or, you know, next week I'm pushing this button right here.
And then how do these guys on Fox say, oh, he's indecisive. He don't know what he's going to do, and he's afraid. Wait a minute. He went off with Dennis McDonough out for a walk and then came back and said, I'm not going to do it because Dennis McGovern is a lefty communist and he talked the president out of it. Well, wait a minute. If I remember correctly, almost the entire cabinet was against him going in and getting Osama bin Laden.
Right.
And he said, I'm going to sleep on it. Came back, it's go.
Yep.
So, all right, his wife talked him out of it then. Maybe.
No.
Talked him into it.
Here's
the thing. How can they have – they want both sides of the fracking fence.
Look, this is a guy who is extremely intelligent, extremely decisive. He's proved it over and over again that he can lead and he can succeed. You know, this is one of the things that blows my mind about all the Republicans. They – when, you know, Junior was out there stomping around the desert being Mr. Soldier Boy, you know, when they can't accomplish anything.
Well, what desert was he in?
Yeah, well, you know. Well, he sent a lot of people
Texas?
To stomp around.
What
but,
desert?
Yeah, exactly.
Give me a break.
He was at the Faux Ranch.
Oh.
But this is a guy who was bumping his chest, like, you know, doing the Tarzan yell and talking about how big and bad he was. And then when it was pointed out, you know, after year two, four, six, eight, you know, you pick, that we had never caught Osama, we weren't. Succeeding.
What are you thinking about?
They, you remember, they changed the strategy every year. They didn't have one. They didn't know what they were there for. They would change every year. We're here for, you know, nation building. We're here for democracy. We're here for gold digging. We're here
right.
for opium growing. You know, we didn't know what we were there. But he said in his defense when he was getting beaten up during the last election, you remember? Oh, Osama bin Laden. We forgot about him. We don't care. It doesn't matter.
Well, here's what he said.
When the president had an opportunity to capture or kill Osama bin Laden, he took his focus off of him, outsourced the job to Afghan warlords, and Osama bin Laden escaped. 6 months after he said Osama bin Laden must be caught dead or alive, this president was asked, where's Osama bin Laden? He said, I don't know. I don't really think about him very much. I'm not that concerned. We need a president who stays deadly focused on the real war on terror.
Mr. President.
I don't think I ever said I'm not worried about Osama bin Laden. It's kind of one of those exaggerations.
So I don't know where he is. I just don't spend that much time on him. I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about.
He repeats it again.
But he said I didn't say it.
Well, you still get it. It's just, he's lying. But the point is, this is just, it's unbelievable what they say about Obama. Obama is actually
what they say about Dixie.
And they'll sit there and just like go, he doesn't do anything.
Right.
This is the guy. Could you imagine if he was in office and he just said, well, Bush went after him all that, but we don't care anymore. He's not a concern of mine. I'm not worried about bin Laden. They would have chewed him up. They would have chewed him alive.
Here's exactly what he said.
When the president had an opportunity to capture or kill Osama bin Laden, he took his focus off of it.
That's it.
When the president had an opportunity.
Well, I pressed the wrong button there. Wait a minute. Wait, it's right here. He also said he had no apology.
Was there ever any consideration of apologizing to the American people?
I mean, apologizing would basically say the decision was a wrong decision, and I don't believe it was a wrong decision.
Well, basically, good enough.
And if you remember, just a few weeks ago, we had the joy of suffering through that Dick Cheney bio. And you remember they asked...
Yes! Tricky Dick!
And he amazingly had the same thing, that he had done nothing wrong. He could think of not one thing. They said, even one thing, what would you know out of your term, out of your administration, that you did wrong or you would change? And he couldn't think of a single thing. You remember? He was totally stuck. Did I ever do anything wrong? Oh, I think I was pretty darn good.
Well, these
guys are just, there was a neat book written about him called Hubris.
Here's what Cheney said about that.
The case of Saddam Hussein, a sworn enemy of our country, requires a candid appraisal of the facts. Simply stated, there is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. There is no doubt that he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us. I had a seat at the stage next to the lectern where he was speaking. And I literally bolted at that. With our help, a liberated Iraq can be a great nation once again.
Vice President Dick Cheney's speech to the veterans of foreign wars is the opening salvo of the Bush administration's effort to sell to the American people what White House insiders call the product.
Thank you very much. It was a shock. It was a total shock. I couldn't believe the vice president was saying this. In doing work with the CIA on Iraq WMD, through all the briefings I heard at Langley, I never saw one piece of credible evidence that there was an ongoing program. And that's when I began to believe they're getting serious about this. They want to go into Iraq.
We know, as just bits and pieces we gather through the intelligence system, but we do know with absolute certainty that he is using his procurement system to acquire the equipment he needs in order to enrich uranium to build a nuclear weapon.
And one more thing, right, Tiki Dick?
My belief is we will, in fact, be greeted as liberators.
We're going in because we're going to be greeted as liberators. That was taken from Hubris, the Dick Cheney saga, which was on TV. And this is just incredible.
They
sold us. We got to go. What's this president saying? Oh, yeah, we're going to go. But you know what? We're going to put a gun to his head first.
Well, now, if you listen to him, now, there's a total difference here. Obama repeatedly throughout it said, I don't want to go. I'm not interested in starting a war. I have no interest in going in and bombing people. I don't want to do these things. But I will uphold international law, and I will follow international law to get there. So if he forces my hand, because you said he said I've exhausted every diplomatic, every kind of different channel. He's going through China and Russia and Assad himself. He's going through the UN councils. He's went through at that time. He's gone through the chemical treaties and everything, and got no response. So he said, given all of that, I've exhausted every constitutional and legal path. I will now be forced to use force. And then Assad goes, okay, you got me. And he came to the table. But again, this is a president acting legally in a completely constitutional manner and stating it step by step, as opposed to people who blatantly invented a war that they wanted for profit. Because even if you take the Al-Qaeda 9/11 attack at face value and that we got to go and get them right now, then you would have gone and gotten them in Afghanistan, right? It had nothing to do with Iraq, never did, never would, never could. And they went in over there, and you heard it right there in his own words, their administration's own words, plan, and procedures said, we are selling the product.
Right.
That's what, the product. They were selling BS, and it was for profit, which is exactly why we've lost billions
now,
of their unaccounted for. They all went vanished.
Now, people could come up to me and say all sorts of things, and I got to back them up. You know, hey, but these guys on Fox use things that they make up, and they say, oh, this person told me this. Well, I met a guy, elderly guy, I shouldn't say elderly, long gray hair. I was at Harris Teeter talking to this friend that I know about Syria, and I said, this is all bull. I said, the president put a gun to the head. And I'm going to read you something from Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times where he wrote that the threat worked. Anyway, this guy just stopped. He says, we always knew they had weapons, because I brought some of them there myself. Now, I don't know this guy. He had a beard, and he was walking off. He just said it as he was walking by. I said, what? Well, you're right. I said, yeah. He said, listen, I'm not going to tell you who I work with, but I delivered weapons to Iraq in the 1980s. They've always had chemical weapons, because they used them on Iran.
Yeah, that's what
he said.
Now,
he said all those people over there had Syria had them. Syria had them, and so did Iraq have them. The only people that didn't have them was Iran, because Iran is not a Muslim country. So they didn't get them. He says, but I was one of a group of people who delivered them. He says, and let me tell you something else. This is in the parking lot of Tarasia. He said, you know what? We know where every single one of those chemical weapons are. He said, because it took 1,500 people to watch and collect and hold those weapons to make sure they were handled correctly. So they're not just moving around on flatbed trucks from here to here to there. Every satellite knows where every single one of them are. And you know what? With the infrared and that we have now, we can tell where they're at.
Right. And just like you even
and
heard.
He says, now this I don't want to say no more. Yeah. And he laughed. I said,
now see that.
Damn, I was sitting in the pocket. I said, holy, I mean, you know what? I said to the guy, did you hear that? He said, yeah. He said, oh, who the hell is he? I said, I have no idea.
But
he's right.
That's even that, yeah. We've even improved technology now, and heard it just
that's
a little bit leaked here and there. During this recent Syrian thing, they've been talking about not only do they know they fired them, not only do they know what they used.
They know where it came
they
from.
They were talking about they knew which batteries, General David knew when his brother.
Absolutely.
They knew
where they came from.
They said they had recordings, and they would only reveal it in closed session because it's top secret.
Absolutely.
But they know where everyone. That's why, also, Assad came, because we said, probably, sending them maps, that we're fixing them to take out X, Y, and Z on every one of the arsenals,
right.
Every one of the warehouses. Here are the locations if you think I'm bluffing.
And,
now, and that's why he went, oh, yeah, I've got them. Where do you want me to sign?
Absolutely. And we are going to have a
I got this theme music that Michael found for me.
The doctor is in the house.
Yeah, Elvis is in the house, Michael.
Elvis is in the house. How are you, Madam Chairman of the 8th Congressional District in North Carolina?
Well, you know, the 8th District, I'm actually on my way to a retreat, a district chair's retreat up in the mountains right now. So, and that's going to be a very interesting retreat.
What do you do on these retreats? I mean, do you sit around and have a little wine and get a little mellow?
Oh, yeah. We don't do anything. We just mess around. No. We go to fix the problems of the world.
Is the chairman going to be there? Is the chairman, Randy Bowler going to be there?
No, he's actually going to be in Concord, Cabarrus County, because they're having an educational forum tomorrow.
Yeah.
And they have invited Minority Leader Larry Hall and Garland Pierce and Antonio Blue, and they're going to be speaking. Yeah. They're going to be speaking. Essentially, what that forum is all about is, if you've ever thought of running for office or you ever wondered how, you know, to participate in running for office, come to this forum tomorrow. It's going to be at Troutman's Restaurant on 601 and 49 in Concord.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. Yeah, I've been there.
Sorry, this is my GPS talking to me, too.
How is the North Carolina, this regressive party, looking at in the next 20 days or so, how the health care plan is going to affect all these people? What are they going to do about that?
So there's still, you know, if you've noticed that there are the advertisements to defund Obamacare have become hot and heavy. I mean, they're even advertising on the Rachel Maddow show, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. The people who watch Rachel, they certainly don't buy into that mess. But anyway, they're really hitting the airwaves and the TV programs with this. We have to defund Obamacare. It is the only way we're going to save our country. Because Obamacare, and they lie, right? They lie. Your premiums are going to go up. You've got to give up your doctor. Every single thing that they address is a lie. Because, no, you do not have to give up your doctor, and no, your premiums will not go up. But they're lying, and they're scaring
people. If you have had insurance before,
mm-hmm.
I will read this again because I read it last week. This is my daughter's insurance. They say the good news is you can keep your current insurance health care plan without any changes to benefits or coverage because your plan is grandfathered.
That's right. In effect,
on or before March 23rd, 2010, when ACA was signed into law.
Hey, I'm sorry. People don't know what the ACA is.
Obamacare.
That's Obamacare.
This is so ludicrous. I mean, how many people in North Carolina now? Well, I'm talking about my daughter's insurance. I don't tell you what it is. It's a golden rule. They have sent out 22 million in change in refunds this month to people who had their health care plan with them.
Yeah. And that's just one insurance company that sent back $22 million. When you combine all of the other insurance companies, you're talking a good chunk of change. You really are. But see, that's the reason why the Republicans need to stop Obamacare from actually reaching its full potential, because they know that once it does, people are going to love it. They just don't want it to happen.
Well, what does the here's the problem. Since these people, well, here in the state they do, but in the federal side, they don't pay for their own health insurance. It's given to them. But what are the state people going to do, keep saying this, in North Carolina, when people start receiving, already have received in the mail, because there's time limited, they have to receive it by the end of August, their check? What are they going to say then now? I just want to know. What are they going to say?
Well, they can't say anything. And that's why I think they're ratcheting up the rhetoric. I mean, I heard, you know, they've run out of a good Soviet illusions. They can't, you know, they can't bring out the ghost of Stalin anymore. So the one that cracked me up the most is I've started hearing now on all the right-wing radio and everything, they've been saying that Obama's like Mao.
Yeah.
That they're controlling everything.
You don't know who Mao is.
Yeah, I know, right? they're reaching, you know, but, you know, everybody knows the Soviet Union's collapse, so now they're trying to, like,
no. Don't say everybody knows Soviet Union collapse.
So,
some people still call it the USSR.
Well, only people that work on Fox News.
Oh, yeah.
They always talk about the Soviets. But I just think it's hysterical. I mean, it's sad, but it's hysterical that they do this, and they're literally saying that, you know, he's going to cause the death of millions.
Right.
Because he's going to be
They're also spreading the other part of the lie, which is that they're telling people that Obamacare can be singled out and defunded, you know? So shutting down the government doesn't mean anything, because they can just single out, carve out Obamacare and defund it. They're also telling people that if the government does get shut down, people will still get their Social Security checks. They will still get their Medicare. They will still get their Medicaid. They'll still get their food stamps, which is a crock of absolute crap.
That's right.
I've even had somebody tell me that in 1995, during the Clinton era, when the government did get shut down, it didn't affect anyone because people still received their Social Security checks. Well, some of them did, but very, very late. And listen,
yes, they
if
got,
you're on Social Security, you need that money to arrive on time.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
Yeah, you can't take interruptions.
Well, the first line of the letter, the insurance company that I pay for my daughter says, this letter is to inform you that you will receive a refund of a portion of your health insurance premium. This refund is required by Obamacare. It is health reform law.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not something that he brought in with him when he brought in the chickens.
Uh-huh.
This is something.
Yeah.
These people voted for it. These people voted for it.
Yeah.
2010. These are the same moves who say they don't want it.
The thing that even makes me madder about the whole situation is not only did they vote for it, not only all this stuff, this was, and this is the part that just infuriates me, this is the watered-down, wrapped-up, horrible, half-assed version that we had to take just to get it passed. And it is the Republican version. I mean, that's why we had the Romney care and all that kind of joke during the last election, because it literally is the compromise we had to take.
It
because
is Massachusetts
if he would have
plan.
If he would have had what he could have gotten with a regular Congress, we would have we'd be everybody gets a magical rainbow with their appendix.
And the problem is they're also afraid of if Hillary Clinton becomes president, especially two-term Hillary Clinton, and by that time we will have taken back the legislature, they can kiss this goodbye. So,
you know there, Mike, we need to shut down them there women.
That's
they're
right.
getting uppity. They can run.
They are. We are, aren't we? We are. My goodness, we actually have voices.
Since you've been with the Democratic Party. Every time I've been talking about the Democratic Party in North Carolina, I say, that uppity Dr. Grace Lee Galloway. We got to do something about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well. It's too late. She's in.
Yeah. You know what, Michael, they've been trying to kick me out of the party for years now, right? And I keep coming back. So I don't know. Maybe they'll tell them something.
They don't. Yeah, but they don't know how to handle you because from their perspective, see, you're from the future. You're like a time traveler. They don't know what to do with you because they go, it's fine. Yeah, this is 1800s. You don't fit in here.
I don't. I know, right? Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So
they're so whack. They are so whack.
I was listening to you guys talk about Dick Cheney and the Iraq War and how Rummy and those guys were so convinced that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. Of course he did. They sold it to him.
Did you hear the
in
part?
In the 1980s.
Yeah. Did you hear the part when I was talking about Harris Teeter when I was coming out and the guy came next to me? I don't know this guy, but he stopped. And he looked like one of those, beggars on the street. But he had groceries, and he came out of Harris Teeter. He didn't smell. He had long hair.
Michael, that's a retired contractor.
Oh, yeah, but there he is. He just stopped and leaned over and says, I had it because I helped deliver it.
Yep.
I helped deliver it to them in 1980.
Yep.
This has been a matter of record. I mean,
yeah.
We almost,
but who reads? They don't read no more.
We almost lost our next Mount Rushmore monument. Mr. Reagan.
Oh, please.
I'm going to be so ill. They cannot do that. You've got to be kidding. They are not planning to add Reagan's face to Mount Rushmore. You've got to be kidding. But you know what? They have named everything in the world after Ronald Reagan. They need to name a sewer plant after him. That's what they need to do, really.
They could have his face. They can have his face as part of the steps that you go up, so you can step on him.
There you go.
Front steps, and it's Reagan's, and, chin, mouth, nose, eyes, head. And
well, I think they ought to, since he was the number one debt president of all time, they should have Mount Detmore.
Oh, Mount Detmore.
And Ronnie Reagan.
Yeah.
You're right.
Absolutely. Yeah, the faces on steps, have you seen my toilet paper? I have toilet paper with George Bush's face on every single square.
You get that, but I want to get that.
You want that? Yeah, I do. I have toilet paper. With George Bush's face on every square.
What are you saying? Are you planning on telling some of the people, the chairs of the North Carolina Democratic Party district chairs, how they can more forcefully put out what the Affordable Care Act is going to do?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're going to definitely talk about that. We're also going to talk about what happened in Union County. I sent a chronological report to all of them, and essentially what I've said is, look, not asking anybody to take sides one way or another. What I'm asking them to do, this is a case study, and if, five different people could get five different interpretations from the plan of organization, then the plan of organization is a faulty document as it stands right now. And so you remember that the plan of organization is going to be rewritten, right? You remember that. And remember that it's been sent back to the district chairs, and the district chairs are being tasked with that project. And I'm on that rewrite committee. I made sure that I'm on the rewrite committee.
Well, I hope you are, because when I was chair of the 8th Congressional District, that came up then, and I wanted to get all the chairs together. But these chairs were so disjointed, we never got together, because you are absolutely correct. See, the thing that bothers me is that the counties don't pay any attention to the chair, especially the county that I live in, Mecklenburg County. And the counties have to answer to the chair of the district, but they feel they don't have to.
Yeah, and there's got to be something written in the plan of organization where there's the grievance procedure right now, okay, is everything, they turf up to the to Raleigh. Okay?
Right.
Everything gets turfed up to Raleigh. There's got
right.
to be a grievance level procedure where
absolutely.
If, you know, these certain things get hurt at the district level, at the county level and the district level, before it goes up to the state. Otherwise, you
yeah.
end up with this, with the chair of the state doing nothing but stomping out brush fires. And you
absolutely.
Certainly got more, yeah, more important
sir,
things to do.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. So now what do you think the chances are of inserting now, that has to be voted on by the entire
mm-hmm.
body.
By the body. Well, we write it with clarity, and that's the problem with those amendments that came up in the last
right.
SEC meeting. They're really, the people who wrote it was very clear to them, but it wasn't
well,
very clear to many other people, and
right.
that was point one. And the second point is that the amendments that they proposed actually took away, set the minority vote back about 100 years.
Oh, absolutely.
Took away benefits and you know, certain...
It's like the party, it's like the regressive party vote. The regressive
yeah,
party...
Well, they wanted to increase the representation, for example, for SEC members. Okay, they want right now is for every 3,000 votes you get one representative, SEC delegate. They wanted to increase that number to 6,000. But you know, if you do that, then what you're doing there are rural counties, and rural precincts where you may not even get.
That's right.
You know.
There are not
3,000 people voting in that precinct.
That's right.
So that
would mean that Mecklenburg County would have twice as many people
right.
as they have now.
So then you get the 800-pound gorilla in the room that becomes now the 3,000-pound gorilla in the room. And so the
right.
urban areas get more say, and the rural areas are being shut out again. So... My thought
well,
is that instead of making it more onerous, to make it easier.
Yes, absolutely. Well, who wrote these? I mean, who was on the committee that started writing it? Was it everybody from Mecklenburg and Wake County? I mean, I don't want
to... No, but look, there were some people on that committee that were awesome, really good, like Cliff Moon. He's really a good guy. He was a district chair. He's now a county chair. He stepped down from being district. Sharon Castleberry, who's a representative from the women, and Sharon is very, very detailed. She's very smart. I mean, she really, you know, she really catches the nuances of things. And so we had some good people. But then you also had some people who I don't know, I guess they thought too much of themselves, with some several young Dems who...
Fracking people.
Yeah.
On the committee that thought of themselves, is that correct?
Right, exactly. I mean, we had young Dems who, you know, love to use the big words, love to use the big legal-type words. But they honestly didn't have any sense as to what they were writing. And I
right.
kept saying to them, you cannot do this. You cannot write a document that only lawyers can understand. You have to
right.
write a document that the man in the street can understand so that they
mm-hmm.
can interpret it correctly. And that is their guidance. You know, you can't do this. But remember, you and I, we are grassroots. Okay,
right.
we're grassroots, so we get it. We get
right.
it right away. But then about these other people that have ambitions, you know, to climb the ladder, you know.
Right.
They don't get it.
What can you say, leave us, because I know you got to go. What is the thing that you want to leave us with? Hello?
You broke up, Michael.
Okay, well, what do you want to leave us with?
I think I just lost you, Michael. I cannot hear a thing you're saying.
Is that better?
But anyway, listen, it was a pleasure, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. And that was Grace Leem, and she
mountains in Colorado.
Yes. Yeah. We have another guest on the line right now. And let's see, who is this? Who's calling?
Michael Barnes.
Michael Barnes, you mean Mayor Pro Tem Barnes? Not yet?
Well, no, I'm not gonna say that now.
I said it.
One race at a time.
I said it. So, congratulations on your win Tuesday. It was awesome. And I remember when you first ran for office.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when you had your first meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at a school, and I can't remember where it was. I think it was over here on the east side. I'm not sure. But I remember. Oh, was it downtown? I can't remember. I remember going to your
long
first,
time ago, right?
Long time ago. And you have been on the city council how long now?
8 years, since 2005.
In 2005. And people have come, people have gone, and you're just not a district representative. You are an at-large member of the council.
Well, I'm an at-large candidate, but I'm still a district representative.
Right. Well, you'll be at-large with everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a little still details. We don't need to worry about anything else. That's just details. And tell us
right.
what district
yeah.
you're from.
District 4, which is Northeast Charlotte, University City, primarily.
University City.
University City, my area. He's my district leader.
Okay.
Tell us, Councilman Barnes, Mayor Pro Tem Barnes, if we will put that in parentheses, what sort of council you are going to have with, I believe, Claire Fallon and David Howard and yourself. Who am I missing somebody? Oh, yeah. Claire Fallon, you, Howard, and who's the other person?
The Democratic nominee will be Vi.
Oh, and Vi, right. Okay. Vi
right.
Lyles, right? Yes.
The fourth Democrat, now, right.
Vi is the fourth Democrat. What do you think the chances are of sweeping 4-0 in November?
Well, if you look at the demographics from a Republican, Democratic, and Independent standpoint, I think there's a fairly healthy chance of the Democrats retaining those four seats. Obviously, everybody's got to run their own campaign, but my sense is that we have the numbers to do it.
Right. Okay. And what the heck is wrong with this daggone turnout? It was less than 7%. I mean,
here's what's interesting about that, though. In 2011, it was about 3%, so we more than doubled it. And most folks were expecting about 5, and we got to 6.7, I think, right under 7, which isn't great. I mean, it would be great if we had 50, but...
Right. Well, but now, just tell me, what do you think the reason is for this? Why?
I think it's the same thing that I've talked about since I've been on the council, and that is that people are busy figuring out how to make a living, figuring out how to feed their kids, how to take care of their families, and we're so over-mediated, if that is a term. People get so much information through smartphones and other technology that I don't think they feel connected to their political leadership. In other words, a lot of folks say, well, they're going to do what they want to do anyway, so why go vote? And we saw in 2008 and 2012 how important it is to vote.
Well, you see,
but I will totally echo what Mr. Barnes said about the economic situation. Everybody I know nowadays, we have shifted our economy from used to it was one job holder per household, then it was two
right.
job holders per household, and now every person usually has two jobs per household. And there is simply no time for anybody to do anything. I have seen across the board fall off in every kind of club and group and organization and everything else because people don't have time. They do not, I mean, our PTAs, everything are suffering because people cannot get there on, you know, that Tuesday night and that Thursday night and that Saturday for that meeting because they're simply trying to survive and keep the house.
Well, you know, I'm going to be devil's advocate on this because I think that's a lot of wrong. And the reason is because I've heard that since the day I was born. We don't have enough time. Every single year of an election, they ask the same question. Why?
Hold on, though.
You know,
hold on one second, Mr. Lawson. The problem, though, is the system has become extremely corrupted from the public's perspective. You've got people like the Koch brothers who are essentially trying to buy elections. You've got the Supreme Court saying that basically any amount of money is allowed to come into a campaign by any particular group, and you don't have to identify who the donors are. So I think folks have just lost confidence or lost faith in the system, and that's what we've got to restore.
Well, you know, and I think it's a very good point you bring up. But I also like to go back to a point that you brought up before, is that where everybody is inundated with all this information, and they see it on cable, they see it on regular TV, they see it here on the radio, they hear it and get it from their smartphone. So everybody thinks that they know what's going on because, you know, the commercials here on TV. Oh, where'd you learn that from? From the internet. Oh, yeah, you know, everything's on the internet. They tell the truth. So a lot of this stuff, as you said, people are getting misinformation because they're overstimulated with the information.
Right.
And I think that also leads to the fact what you said, that people are lumping everybody in one place. They're all corrupt. And it's not going to change anything if I vote. Well, you know, I was talking to Judge Cherry Beasley about a month ago. And I was also talking to Randy Bowler, the state chair of the Democratic Party here in North Carolina. And I said to them, you know, what would it take to change the format of the ballot and reverse everything that's on? Just reverse it. Have the first at the top of the ticket, if the Supreme Court is running on North Carolina, that's who's there. And then go down to all the judges, and then go to the sheriffs, and then go to the councilmen, and then go to the county commission, and then get to the federal government, and the president is the bottom one on the ticket. This would force more people. Of course, they could scroll through the whole thing, but this would force more people
to
look. Because you, as the council, you on the council, and when you become mayor pro tem, end quote, you run the city, not the mayor. You and the council run the city, and that's more important than the president of the United States.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because people don't realize that we do have more impact on their lives than the president does. We can raise taxes. We can cut police resources. We can increase police resources. We can stop paving streets. We can stop building sidewalks. People don't realize how direct an impact the city council can have on their lives. Of course, it's not our intention to do that. But we,
I hope not.
But you're right. We have that kind of power.
That's absolutely correct. So I think that part of any platform that a candidate from the city council or the county commission needs to say, we are more important than the president of the United States. We are more important than the attorney general of the United States. Because this, people need to get and understand this.
Well, they just
need
to reconnect with their local stuff. They need to like ignore the local and only pay attention to the national because it's on like MSNBC or something that evening.
Right. So since I put you on the spot and you're more important than the president of the United States, tell me What one? We're going to talk about this CRB, this Council Civilian Review Board. How would you handle it with the problems that's going back and forth now?
Let me tell you, we actually have our staff people reviewing the ordinance and the policy. And as you know, it's been on the books for about, the CRB has been around for about 15 years, I believe. And what we're trying to determine is how to tweak it. And so I told some of the proponents of the changes that it would be probably next to impossible for us to empower the CRB with subpoena power, for example, because we can only do what the state will allow us to do in that regard. And there is no indication that the state legislature is going to allow us to expand the powers of a group that of a body that has investigatory or quasi-investigatory authority over police in the state. So what we're trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say the Republicans would the last thing they would ever want is to empower anybody with investigatory powers.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Well, that's right. And so what we're saying is there some sort of hybrid that we could create where people are able to be heard and to actually get more of the information they want without trying to create a system that would essentially would immediately draw scrutiny from the legislature?
Well, now the thing is, Charlotte, North Carolina is the 17th largest city in the United States and growing every day. Los Angeles has it. New York has it. Chicago has it. They all have subpoena power. I don't want to hear what Boise, Idaho has. They're not. I had more kids that people that lived on my block than they have in Boise, Idaho. So when I lived in New York. So the thing is that I think one thing besides the investigatory power is that if the Civilian Review Board got the actual information and not a transcribed cut and paste version that the police gives them. Because I think that's what they're seeing.
And that might be in order. And remember also though, the states you just listed are all blue states.
Okay.
And so I'm not surprised that they have that sort of power. What I think we're looking at is whether you, and by the way, I don't know why certain documentation isn't given, but do keep in mind that, at least under Chief Monroe's tenure, he has been willing to fire bad cops. And I know there needs to be a level of accountability in the system, and I think there is because a lot of these matters are handled before they ever get to the CRB, and people don't seem to know that, but they do. They are handled within the chain of command.
We had talked about, with who was it, Matt Newton, who's the guy that's coming on. Okay, we've been talking about the last couple of weeks about this, but the only thing that I kept hammering home, but I just can't understand, within limits, we don't have to, go all the way and, change things, get subpoena power and all this kind of stuff, but there are ways to simply open the drapes, let some sunshine in, and let the public see some of the process so that it is transparent and they have faith in the system. Because the way it goes
and I
now
think that's what,
is they don't have faith because they think it's secret.
Right, and that's what we're trying to tweak. And the question is, are the tweaks going to be tweaks that the city council has the authority under our state constitution and the state and the city charter to do, or are they the types of tweaks that would require state approval? In other words, gentlemen, it seems simple to say just open up everything and let everybody see everything.
Right.
And so what we're trying to figure out is where actually can we make the adjustments that people want us to make? And it's not as easy as just saying, well, hell, we're just going to open up everything and let people do whatever they want to do. It's not quite that easy.
Your explanation has been a lot clearer than a lot of explanations that I've gotten.
Yeah.
And the because that was one of the things of many of the things that we've been hearing here. And I think that because one of the main things, as I just said before, was that when the reports come to the CRV, it seems like they've been sanitized. And it there's no sense having a CRB that's going to look at a sanitized report, and there's no sense having a CRB if the CRB reports directly to the city manager, who reports directly to the city council, because that's everything in-house. So there has to be a little more separation between where they report to. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. I do. And the thing, maybe it's because I'm an attorney, but I do want there to be as much transparency and free flow of information as possible.
Oh, that
I just, we just need to figure out what the boundaries are.
Well, yeah. See, and a lot
Let's
of people,
out the way to do that.
Yeah, a lot of people right now don't understand how much control the state has over this city.
Yeah,
and over every city.
And you made a good point a few moments ago. You were alluding to something I wanted to actually bring up, and that is that after President Obama won in 2008 and was reelected in 2012, what the Republicans figured out is if they can't have authority at the White House level, they'll take it at the state level. So as a result, we now have, out of 50 state legislatures, 30 of them are run by Republicans. And they have implemented the agenda, as you've heard of ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. They've implemented the agenda of ALEC across the country. All these voter ID bills, all these abortion bills, all these tax cut bills have come from the ALEC group. And so what they've managed to do is take authority or view it differently and say, rather than taking authority at the federal level, we'll take it at the state level. And they're attacking blue cities like Charlotte. That's why we're going through this airport debacle. That's why Asheville is going through an airport and water system controversy. That's why Greenville, North Carolina, is having some controversy over its airport, as I recall. So the states, the 30 states that have turned red, are trying to push the red all the way down to the local level. And so it's up to people like me to resist a lot of that if we can, because, you know, our values aren't to divest in public education, but to invest in public education. You know, I want to have North Carolina be a progressive state and not go backwards, which is where our current leadership is taking us.
Right.
So I very much get what you're saying, but
even I can appreciate, you know, changes of opinion and philosophy in politics, but you know, then there's just the ridiculousness of going back to the 1800s. They got us going now, but
yeah.
I do like you know, what you're saying is absolutely true, because this is how they keep putting like roadblocks in, for instance, for the Affordable Care Act and stuff. It's because individual governors will say, "Well, I don't want it in my state," you know. So they're doing everything
right.
They can to limit presidential power and stuff on the state level. But so here's a question for you that. Totally unrelated to your our former talk, but since you were on the Transportation Planning Committee at one time, I was curious just if I can pick your brain for half a second, because one of the great things that Obama did that I've just been beating my head against the wall ever since is, you know, he called for high-speed rails across the country. He called for investment in our infrastructure everywhere, and they have successfully, you know, hobbled that repeatedly by either defunding it, not funding, not picking it up, or just it on individual state and county levels. So, reverse engineering their exact actions. Why don't you, as a city councilman, why don't you go city to city to all the other councilmen and set up a network and, you know, reinvigorate these ideas from the ground up rather than the top down? Because one of the things that made me mad was, you know, by this time, we would have already been high-speed rail linked to New York and everywhere else and been able to jump on and jump off in Washington, D.C. and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they stopped all that, just like they did with the light rail and the, you know, trolley and everything else. They, well, we're not going to put it up north of the city, or we're not going to do this, or we're not going to connect it somewhere. So is there a way for you to maybe communicate? You know,
yeah, as Mayor Pro Tem, he'll be able to do that.
Well, no, but even as
okay,
a council,
there you go with that again. Listen, actually, there is. You know, the North Carolina League of Municipalities is essentially the lobbying group for the cities in the state. And we have the ability to push for things like that. But let me tell you the problem. It's so expensive to do projects like that that most cities don't have the capital capacity to fund the debt. So we need the federal government or the state to help us get it done. Now, there is a work being done on the high-speed rail corridor through Charlotte. you know, that's being planned from, I believe, Greensboro, I think, to Charlotte. And then it will be extended north to Washington and beyond, and then south to Atlanta. So that work is being done, but you're right, it is moving at a snail's pace. But what's happening is you have a situation in Charlotte where we're actually passing bonds and passing a budget that includes over $800 million in capital spending. So over the next 10 years, you're going to see a lot of construction in Charlotte. If you've been on North Tryon Street in University City, you see it looks like destruction taking place, but it's a part of the Blue Line extension and the work we've got to do to get that project done. So Charlotte, luckily, is blessed to have the capital capacity to fund a lot of major projects, but most smaller towns and cities can't do that. And so you're right, there needs to be, you know, a group effort, but I kind of wonder, even if we all get together and you know, lobby Raleigh to help us, I don't know where it would go.
Yeah, well, right. Raleigh's not taking, they wouldn't even take money for the health care plan. And yeah.
They'll bring you a complimentary horse and buggy.
Right. I don't know if you were on the phone. I was talking to, Dr. Grace Lean Galloway. She's chair of the 8th Congressional District. And we have her on the show every week, and we talk about the health care. And we were just talking about, I just got a check in the mail. I pay for my daughter's health care plan, and I just got a reimbursement check. So the checks are already in the mail, as they say.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, I had this check sitting on my computer desk for 1 month before I opened it up, because I looked at it. I thought it was just advertising from the health care plan that I have for my daughter. But exactly, it says that because of the health care in the ACA, Obamacare, there will be no more changes. There will be no changes to your health care plan or benefit coverage, because you are grandfathered in as long as you came in before March 23rd, 2010. So everybody, they sent out over 22 million, 800 something million dollars to people in North Carolina.
And it was real money. It wasn't like
$4.
It was
real money. It was $99 they sent me back.
Yeah.
So, you know, the people, this is something else that I think the city council should be shouting out. I mean, we're a Democratic city council here. They should be saying, hey, you people, get your young people to buy health care plans October 1st, because as long as more people come in, the less the insurance is going to cost, and that's going to put a major plan. Even though this doesn't really fall in your bailiwick, but it's when it comes from you, city council, I mean, people might think, hey, you know, they care about other stuff that they don't handle. You know,
just goes along. It's
right.
Informed electorate.
Right, and you're informing the public. So this is the reason why they're trying to kill this before October 1st, because when people actually find out, you know, I'm getting a reimbursement check, they're going to assume it's all lies, what they've been saying since Obama came into office.
That's why they're going to see real benefit.
So, but that's just a sidetrack. But I think that if our elected officials would also add in things in their normal conversation with the public that doesn't really, it's not in their bailiwick, people will think, you know, they really care about me, because they are even talking about something that they have no control of. So, you know, but
you know, I think
the
president should actually embrace the name that they, you know, the Republicans use Obamacare as a slur, but the fact of the matter is Obama does care enough. I mean, he's essentially staked his presidency on this health care plan.
Absolutely correct. Well, I know you gave us a lot of time, and I want to thank you. And I'd like
to
have you back on, because you have really explained in English and not in lawyerese. A lot of things have come to light, and a lot of things you said have been really brought to light in a little plainer language.
Yeah, I mean, he did clear up a few things we had talked about for the last several weeks that we didn't get clear answers on. So that's great.
And
I appreciate
so
it.
I want, and
also, by the way, sir, I noticed that, you know, since you are a lawyer, I would say this, because, you know, I listen to NPR, and I have to have some of the Jurassic Park. I apologize, but I do. And they had the other day, they had a whole program devoted to the law schools in North Carolina and about, you know, the pros and cons and about the cost and everything because of education going up and blah, blah, blah. And they were talking about, you know, law schools, if you go to the very prestigious ones versus the cheaper ones, is it worth it, you know, to get that far in debt, blah, blah. But being that you were a successful lawyer and now sitting on city council and all, I was just going to say, hey, perfect opportunity. You might want to go, you know, lend your voice to that, talk to them, talk to the law schools or whatever, because they had a lot of great questions and stresses they were bringing up about the cost and if it was, you know, viable to go into law anymore and things of that nature. So just throwing that out.
Right. No, I appreciate that.
Because we do have a law school, a new one, right here in town.
Right.
That's right. The proposition has shifted since I started doing it. The costs for a lot of folks have really, really gone up, and the job opportunities have really, really gone down. So it's something to really think twice about and fully vet before you do it.
Absolutely. Okay, I want to thank you, Councilman Michael Barnes. My
yes,
district here in North Carolina, and we want to have you back on the show. So I will give you a call, and especially because, hey, coming up, you're still running.
Yeah, well, you're still running, but especially since you can explain things.
That's right. Yes.
Even I can understand it.
So we'll just nickname you Explainer-in-Chief number two next to Bill Clinton.
Right. You're great. If you want more information about me, can I give you my website?
Let's give you website, phone number, everything.
Barnes for Charlotte, Barnes, FORCharlotte.com is the campaign site, and BarnesInjuryLaw.com is the law site. And those are the best ways to reach me.
How about phone numbers?
Phone number, 704-509-6141 is a good way to reach me.
Okay.
And can we still use the BarnesDistrict4 at AOL.com?
You can for now. Hopefully you won't be able to in a few months, but,
that's right.
But it's still there.
All right.
Have a
okay.
great weekend.
You too.
All right.
Thank you, Michael.
Take care, guys. Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Councilman Michael Barnes, soon to be Mayor Pro Tem Michael Barnes. I said it again.
That's
but
right.
Anyway.
Right. Now, I like that.
Yeah.
He explains things well.
I met him at his first meeting when he first ran for office. He was very green. Didn't know how he should approach people.
One of his skills over here.
And now he just whips it up. What?
One of his skills under.
Oh, yeah, but
where it was. We met in the cafeteria and he was talking one night.
Was it the cafeteria?
Like high school.
Oh, yeah.
Was that him?
I'm trying to think.
About 10 years ago.
Yeah, it was a long. It was in the cafeteria of a school.
Yeah.
And I can't remember. Now I'm thinking it might have been over in. What's that place downtown now? There?
I can't
remember. Oh, I can't remember. Anyway.
But that's probably what we're.
Yeah.
Same one we're thinking about.
So it was 2005. So yeah. Well, anyway.
Yeah.
Michael Barnes is running for office, and we will have him back on so you can hear him again.
And by the way, just for you guys, if you're paying attention, he is a lawyer, and he's been the chair of the Budget Committee,
mm-hmm.
vice chair of the Transportation Planning Committee,
mm-hmm.
and he was members of the Community Safety and the Housing and Neighborhood Development Committees. So
oh.
this man
yes.
is literally, I mean, they talk about, you know, on the pulse of the city. This guy is the man that you want to know and you want to support because he is holding your neighborhood planning, your budget, and your transportation in his hands. So this is a guy that has got your back.
We have something else that I wanted to talk about.
Oh, there's so much we want to talk about. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, have... So,
we've got
what's in the news today?
Oh, please. You've got all this.
Oh, I want to know what's in
you
the news.
You want crazy news or the real news, Mike?
Let's give real news first, then get crazy news.
Well, so just like we were talking about with Mr. Barnes about these outside groups that can donate so much money.
Yep.
And you know, they've been going around taking over state after state, and he mentioned ALEC, for instance.
Well, and ALEC is not a name of a person.
No, no, no. It's A-L-E-C. So, but these groups, you know, everybody's like, oh, man, how they, you know, these Republicans, they seem like they're really on message. They're just, they're, no, they are extremely organized, and they are, in fact, all preaching from the same script. And one of the major groups behind the script writing has been for quite a while are the Koch brothers.
The Koch brothers.
The Koch brothers, which, you know, they like to say Koch. I, using the old you know, Celtic right. pronunciation of their name, K-O-C-H, it's the Koch brothers. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But anyway, they like to call it Koch. But these guys are the oil and coal barons of the world here that absolutely hate America for some reason.
Of course they do.
They don't like the entirety of America. They don't want taxes. They don't want government. They don't like regulation. They don't want anything. They're the ones that fund all these Tea Partiers around the country who call for not just, I'm not talking about, hey, let's get rid of Obama. These are the guys that want to abolish every department of government.
Everything.
They want to get rid of IRS.
Everything.
They want to get rid of all federal
oversight
completely.
What's their...
they want to get back, like, these guys...
ALEC stands for the something legislation...
I don't know. 1860-something. I can't remember. But anyway, another revelation came out because, you know, due to our illustrious right-wing Supreme Court, we have now, you know, allowed corporations to be people. And corporations that are people can now spend unlimited amounts in elections. And to make it even better, because you don't want to stifle their voice, they don't actually have to report it up front. It's kind of slid in, and they kind of just admit it later. And then you can look and see after the fact who contributed.
American
that way it
legislature,
you know, it doesn't embarrass any of these companies.
Council, the American Legislature Exchange Council.
Yeah.
Alec.
Well, they always have these nifty names.
Yeah,
like,
of course,
you know,
of course.
Their bill that passed the USA Patriot Act sounds wonderful. Gee, I'm vote for that. That sounds like an American flag. Oh wait, it did what? They're good at these little names. But anyway, so they have this new group that just came out, and this is another name you'll love: the Freedom Partners.
Oh, I just love it to death. I'm sick.
Partners. Well, see, the Freedom Partners didn't even exist over a year ago. But with the election that came out, 2012, they suddenly popped into existence. But nobody knew they even existed
right till
this week.
Right.
And the reason they didn't know that they existed is because they just had to turn in their little IRS document. Which is also another reason they want to abolish the IRS, because news like this comes out when they turn in their documents, you see. But anyway, it turns out that guess who was the number one contributor for all campaigns?
Let me see. The Koch brothers.
The Koch brothers.
Oh, how did I get that?
So through their
Art Pope.
Through their little organization.
Yeah.
You know, Art Pope's probably like, you know, their little third cousin or something. Freedom Partners donated $256 million to Republicans. Outstripping
everything. Well, he took it out of his front pocket.
Yeah, these are billionaires, so they just had spare change. But that's what they gave to them just for the election. Okay? Now, that outspent every group in America. So these two brothers outspent America, inclusive of all people, corporations, organizations, and everything else. And they said the only two, and this is the part that just kills me, the only two people that came close to them is Karl Rove with the American Crossroads.
How could I guess?
And then, you got to realize that Karl Rove's American Crossroads was started by the Koch brothers. Also, that was their partner originally, and then they had a falling out because, you know, they wanted more control. And then Karl Rove's subgroup, Crossroads GPS. Now, these three groups, which were all one group originally, were the number one contributor of the – these are the top three, right? And they're just basically three people.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely.
But they single-handedly, you know, gave their billions. But these people are just unbelievable, and I just want people to start paying attention because these groups – and if you see these groups – the Center to Protect Patient Rights.
Oh.
Against Obamacare.
Well, who's right?
The
patient? What does that mean, patient right? Is that patient, like, in the hospital? I don't think so.
The American Future Fund.
Right.
The Concerned Women for America's Legislative Action Committee.
Concerned?
And, of course, the National Rifle.
Let me break that down. Say that again. The Concerned Women.
Let's put these names here. The Concerned Women for America's Legislative Action Committee.
What the hell does that mean?
We're spending money against everything, and we hate your guts. That's what I mean. You know, and then they have their old standbys like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the NRA. All that stuff. These are all their subgroups they fund and all. But so these two brothers alone, $256 million. Are you kidding me? This is what's wrong with American politics, and that's exactly why, like our state, as Mr. Barnes was just saying, like 30 other states have been taken over on the local level.
Right.
Because
that's what
they're willing
offers.
To spend
right.
hundreds of millions of dollars, and people don't realize it's happening.
They don't care about the president. They know they will
no.
never get that again. But you know
that
what?
They
they're all in
every
the lower
groups,
controlling everything.
And that's why you also see all the time these things like, you know, school boards taking over and they start denying science.
Well, you see what they say in Ohio. The principal of the school rejected Toni Morrison's new book, The Bluest Something or Other. He says it's indecent and I'm not going to have it in the school. And he made a big thing about it. It's called The Blue Eye. Bluest Eye. Anyway, this I don't know about the book. I haven't read about the book. The first time I heard about it today. But he's taking a stand. I do not think it should be in any school. Wait a minute. He's only a principal of one school.
Right.
Is he nuts?
Well,
this is Ohio.
No, but it's all dictatorial. And look, these are the same. This is why though they want to take over. See, people don't realize they're like they're so shrewd that you know they've tried a couple.
But
of
they're
times.
Not shrewd.
No, but they are in this way.
We got their
picture
now.
But they've tried for years to pass overarching legislation. Just saying, you know, let's make coal breakfast food, and then it fails. You know, and everybody goes, "What the hell is wrong with you?" So now what they do, so that people don't see them on the radar. If they go to your school board and take over, and then suddenly children can't learn about, you know, climate change in school. Well, that's wrong. You know, we don't need to learn science. We've got the Bible or whatever.
Right.
And then they take over the city council, and then they take over the, you know, roads commission, and they take over the this and the that. And before you know it, every city and every county is suddenly somehow red, and you just don't know what happened. But what happened was hundreds of millions of dollars poured into your
now,
town.
The American Legislative Exchange Council, or otherwise known as ALEC,
mm-hmm.
it's a 501c3.
Right.
Okay? Now, their daggone 501c3 has to be challenged.
Yes.
Because they are not.
They're introducing law, everybody.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, this is their complete mission statement. American organization composed of state legislatures, businesses, foundations. Now, how can it be composed of state legislatures and be independent?
Right.
I mean, come on, nonpartisan.
Well, see, again, it doesn't make sense.
Okay. There's no democratic legislatures involved with that.
Mm-hmm.
State legislative
and
businesses
I like their,
and foundations would produces model policies for state legislatures and promotes free market, limited government, and federalism of state levels. Now, here's the problem with this.
And here's look at the key terms. Federalism, in their sense, is back to states'
1776.
Rights. It's all states' rights.
Right.
That was back when we had the Confederacy.
That's correct.
There is no federal.
There is government. No federal, right.
Because each state
that's
has
correct.
Federal power.
That's right.
Okay, you know what we call that? That's like that Baltic crap over in Europe where there's 55,000 countries all
right.
within the size of, you know, North Carolina.
Right.
So, but anyway, that's disaster and anarchy. But that's what they...
Well, that's what happened in Africa, same thing.
But that's what they did, yes.
Right.
They want to go through because, you know, what happens in Africa? There's no functional government,
that's right.
So they can just rape and pillage and dig
absolutely,
out all the oil and pour
absolutely.
The mercury in your water and then
that,
just walk off
right.
laughing.
Because this one says, oh, never mind, that stream also goes through your state.
Mm-hmm.
It starts here, but it goes through your state too.
Yeah.
Not my fault.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be living downstream.
So we'll just divert 90% of it here, and then we'll replace it with sewage as it goes into your
absolutely.
State.
Absolutely.
So
now,
that's fair.
The thing with Alec is, when Councilman Barnes was talking about that,
mm-hmm.
30. Of the state, 33, I think, of the state legislatures are Republican, red.
Yep.
And every one of them, every last one of them has the same state legislative plan.
Yeah.
Every one of them.
Agenda.
From out. They didn't have to, these
if
guys came in office and didn't have to think about nothing. We have the blueprint and we have the information, and it's just like.
Well, see, that's also proof
yeah.
that they don't care about locality.
Of course not.
Or individual states. They've got blueprints for the entirety. Because, you know, what is the same in North Carolina should be the same in Alaska, and it should be the same in Florida, it's the same in Oregon, it should be the same in Maine. You know, no, it's BS. Every location has its own unique things, but they don't care.
They don't care. It's, you know, it's one size fits all. We're giving you the plan. It'll work in all 33 states. Well, how can that plan work in all 33 states when they're telling us we cannot put a federal school plan in existence for the state because every state is individual?
Yeah.
And that makes no common sense.
Again, this is part of the dichotomy of this conservatism that drives me nuts. While they're against everything with government, they have the plan for government.
Yeah, right.
While they hate politicians and the evils of them, they're all running for office.
They're all running for office.
And it's just like this Rand Paul. I guarantee I will, if I'm elected, I'm going to, my first day, abolish all the cabinets and all of the committees and all of the agencies of government.
Right.
What the hell are you running for? Why do you want to be president of the United States if you're going to abolish the United States?
That's
day
right.
One? I mean, well, but so it doesn't make sense. And so this same thing here. We don't want government oversight. We don't need all these regulations and laws and everything else. So here's a whole bunch of laws.
Yeah, but here's all those laws and regulations. Right.
Now,
right.
FOBC,
Alec also serves as a networking tool among state legislators, allowing them to research and handle the best practices and policies in other states.
So, two things about that statement. One, the operative word is tool.
Tool! Yes!
You are a tool.
Yes, you are a tool
now,
for us!
The second thing that really bothers me about that is notice it says, so that your legislature can handle things in other states. What?
In other states.
Metal what?
Metal. Listen, don't worry about it. We want you to run for office. Oh, but I don't know. Don't worry about it. When you get in office, we will give you a planning book.
Mm-hmm.
And every little
we'll
follow this
you.
Planning
don't
book.
You worry about little head
no, listen, you're not vote. You're not running. And
hey,
this is a representative Republican, right?
Exactly,
so they're supposed to represent us.
This is exactly how we get people like, you know, Palin and stuff in office, because they get non-thinking, just empty
nitwits.
To stand up there and then
fracking
just say, here
nitwit.
Is your script, read
right.
it.
Fracking nitwits,
the, yes, fracking.
As they say in Battlestar Galactica.
You know what? If they keep fracking enough, everybody's
well,
got nitwit.
That's right. And
we'll all be like lead poisoning. It'll be just.
No, these, I mean, people are.
And this is what
so
I liked about.
Ludicrous.
Alex, I love how they twist and use everything. Because if you look right on their website, at the very top, right on their little tagline, it says alec.org. It says here to protect free speech. See, that's the cover. You can't attack anything we're doing because there's free speech, right? But yet, we're going to attack all your
rights. So I don't understand how they can be protected as a 501c3. Because a 501.
Don't ask questions, Mike.
I mean, it to me, what are we talking about here? It says 501c3, religious, educational, charitable, scientific literacy, testing for public safety. To foster national or international amateur sports competition or prevention of cruelty to children or animals organizations. That's what a 501c3 is.
Right.
It doesn't say anything about taking over states.
Right. So here's another point I want people to think about. Let's look at the numbers for a second. This is a agency. Well, a group, organization, whatever they want to call themselves, that
criminals
have written laws that have been passed now in 30-something states. Okay? So they are controlling 30-something states of the United States. Okay? Now just think of this for a moment. This is the foundation of two brothers, And looking at their website, I'm on it live right now. I'm not making this up. I'm looking at live membership. We have up to 2,000 members, making ALEC one of the nation's largest nonpartisan individual public-private membership associations of state legislators in the country. Now, given if that's a fact even, I don't know their membership. I can't see their membership. But let's take it at 2,000. Let's even say, hey, let's give them a – let's double it. Let's say they had 5,000 members. You're telling me that 5,000 people, even if that was it, are writing the legislation for all the millions and controlling over 30 states now? So you're talking one handful of people running everything because that's over a majority. Am I correct?
Okay.
Is 30 more than half of 50?
Well, do they count Hawaii? Because I understand that's a –
Well, it's good for vacations.
Oh,
so
okay.
We'll have our seminar there.
Okay.
But this is – it's just disturbing. I mean, when you look at something that's so small but has such vast power, it makes you really worry. And this is what you got to think about. We're a democracy.
Oh, really?
We all have a voice. We all have a vote. This
We are a representative republic.
Well, listen,
we are not a democracy.
But listen, this
and
is
that's why they can get away with that,
yes,
because we're not a democracy.
I know. But this is what they're trying, though, to completely limit. This is how two brothers can exert influence over millions and hundreds of millions of Americans because they have the money in their pocket to do it. And they just set up a website and then they churn out, you know, on their old Xerox machine, a couple of copies or something. And then they buy some politicians and say, passes.
That's right.
Passes. And now at their height of power, controlling 30 states and being the number one by the IRS reporting, the number one contributor for the campaign for the President of the United States and every legislature in the country, they have up to maybe 2,000 people have joined them. Are you kidding me? That's just frightening. There's more than, like you said, much, you know, the church down the street has more than 2,000 members.
That's
are you
sure.
freaking kidding me?
You're about to share.
But yet they're right. writing all the laws in 30-something states?
Well, but see, it's
that's
all,
scary stuff.
Well, listen. They, it also says here in the 501c3 that ALEC, okay, they also support, they are also supporting organizations which are often referred to in shorthand form as, quote, friends of, end quote, organizations. What the hell does that mean? That's how the 501c3 is written. That needs to be changed.
Yeah.
And see,
what that
this,
means
this,
is,
what's we think of friends
of?
Of?
Here's a term that people in the oil and coke and, oh, I don't know, tax evasion industry like a lot. It's called shell companies. So when you have an endless amount of shell companies, that's how they also get away with this, because when one of their names gets tarnished, you know, like,
oh,
Blackwater got tarnished, you remember, you know, overseas, and then they became, you know, XE, she, or whatever.
Right.
Well, that's why they say, ALEC starts getting bad press, guarantee it's actually going to be Apex.
Yeah, well that's what you were reading. When you started off, you were talking about this organization. What was the name of the organization? There was an organization.
Oh, their big, yeah. their
right.
campaign one is the Freedom Party.
Right, well. One of the organizations that was contributed to ALEC, and I don't know if it was that, changed their name.
Yeah.
Again,
they
change their name every 4 years.
So as soon as they get known to the public,
right,
in the press, they get exposed.
They change their name.
So that the public isn't aware. And that's what I'm talking about. This is all shell games from a small
and
group of people.
A 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
Exemptions apply to corporations and any community chest fund, corporation, association, or foundation organized or operated exclusively for religious, charitable, scientific, testing for public safety, library, education purposes, to foster national and international amateur sports, which I read before. These are supporting organizations which often referred to, as I again said, as friends of. So that means you're going to give it to Ron Paul because he's a friend of the other.
This is an umbrella group with all its little minions running around, and you know, anybody's a friend of a friend, you know.
I mean,
it's kind of like back in Sicily. Hey, you're a friend of a friend.
Friend of a friend. Well, I saw that.
You got to make things happen sometimes, Mike. You know.
Well, there is a.
It's all phony.
It's all phony.
Well, I said family with a big F, but that's okay.
It's
phony
family.
Network.
It's family. Now,
in a Corleone.
In a Corleone sense, right.
Yeah.
I understand that. Now, we want to.
And just one last thing I was just pointing out about this. Okay, I just looked on here. They've got a Google site, just like, you know, Facebook.
Yeah, Google
Plus. You know, Google Plus site for Alec.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Again. This is such an important organization that they control 33 states, she said, maybe.
In Minnesota, 33, yep.
They are the number one legislator writer of all laws in the country. They are the number one contributor to campaigns in the country, these brothers. But Alec, for instance, has lifetime, this is live right now today, 421 followers.
That's all?
That's it. You know,
that's all.
Just by setting
my
up
dead
that,
dog has more followers.
No joke. On my Facebook, I maxed out about 2 months after I set it up, over 5,000, and I couldn't even get more. And they said I had to go to a public page. I mean, you could have more just by showing up. You know,
they
but so again, this is someone who controls 30 something states. Now, by any reasonable, any kind of real life situation, just by being in 33 states, they should have a couple hundred million people following them, right?
I mean, if they're 33 states, which they are, that's because the only people who are getting paid are these Republican legislators in those states. That means, wait a minute, how many people do we have in the Congress? 435? So every one of them are congressmen?
I'm speechless about these guys. I mean, their own website says they have maybe 2,000 members nationwide, and their following on Google Plus is 420 people. I mean, you know, you could post a picture of your grandchild on the page and get more followers by this afternoon. This is so sad. But this is why people need to wake up. This is what's controlling your country. A group of dudes sitting around playing with their cold nuggets. And they're buying your legislature out from under you. And they're changing the laws out from under you. And that's why they've closed down.
Playing with your Anthony Weiner. These people.
I didn't say Anthony.
These people are just out.
I said they were playing with the coal dust.
These people are so criminal. It's outrageous. These people are just criminal. It's unbelievable how criminal are. And they're talking about our president.
That's why they're named the Koch brothers. They just really are.
Koch brothers? Okay. Anyway, these people, now.
So just wake up quickly before they change their name again. And it's not Alec anymore. You know, at least you know what you're looking at.
Guys,
but do something. Hey, to all you 6% that show up to vote, bring a neighbor.
Talk to
your spouse. Do something. I mean, come on.
I mean,
you wonder why things are getting bad and we're back in the 1800s? It's because no one showed up. But you know who did show up?
Alec.
The Koch brothers and their money.
And their 423.
Their money showed up.
Now, I want to get on something about this fool, Ted, the Canadian Senator Cruz, because he's not American. He's a Canadian senator.
He was born in Canada. I'm telling you that he's changing that. I saw he was giving up. He's renouncing his Canadian citizenship.
But you can't renounce where you were born.
Hey, I'm sorry.
He's, for now on, Canadian Senator Ted Cruz.
You know what it is? If you can have your Kenyan-born Al-Qaeda agent in the White House, well, we can have our Canadian, yeah?
He was born in Canada, and these people are still, I mean, it was so disgusting. This fool, Ted Cruz, he was at a meeting, I think it was the Heritage Foundation. It was the Heritage Foundation.
Another one of those words.
Right.
They use.
Speaking about, it was speaking about that fool, Jesse Helms, from North Carolina. It was the anniversary of Jesse Helms, and Ted Cruz, Senator, Canadian Ted Cruz, said some real screwed up things.
Bacon.
I mean, he said that there should be more people. Matter of fact, he said there should be 100 more people in the Senate like Jesse Helms. That's what he said. 100 more people. Just listen to this.
Wait a minute. Yes. Dead and rotting? I'm not quite.
Well, Jesse Helms was always rotten, but dead.
More like when he was alive.
I'm yeah, well, all right. Yeah,
Jesse Helms when he first ran. Then he opened the mail and outfell a check for $5,000 from John Wayne. Apparently, it's a true story. And he looked at this check, and he didn't know John Wayne, but, you know, I mean, that was the John Wayne, and the address was California, so he decided he was going to call him and thank him for this. So he spent some time trying to track down. It's not easy to figure out how do you call John Wayne, but he managed to figure out how to do so. And he placed the call, and then the Duke answered the phone. And apparently Jesse Helms said, you know, Mr. Wayne, this is Jesse Helms. I just wanted to thank you for your tremendous support in this race. Apparently John Wayne said, who? Jesse Helms, I'm running for Senate in North Carolina. Apparently Wayne said, oh, yeah, you're that guy saying all those crazy things. We need 100 more like you. The willingness to say all those crazy things is a rare, rare characteristic in this town. And if everything is true now as it was then, we need 100 more, like Jeff Kelly from the U.S.
Wow. Now, 100 more, that means it would be no women. Well, there is no African Americans, except for one, and he's, you know, a gopher. So, yes, and that's how Jesse Helms felt. So there was a time.
But here's the thing. I can't understand how he got this because, I mean, of all people, you know, at first I was kind of excited when you said I thought he was talking about, you know, Jesse Ventura, and I thought, oh, wow, that'd be exciting. We'll have
no,
some more conspiracy.
Like Jesse Helms.
But Helms was a diehard racist.
Oh, absolutely.
And homophobe. And he always said and did things that were so horrific that you had to run from him. And the only way he kept his job is because he was part of that last dying breed of the Southern, send them to the Senate and they let them die there, you know, like Strom, the one-legged. They used to have these endless terms. So that was the only reason he even stayed in power. But he was one of the most embarrassing. If you're
absolutely. Jesse Helms, okay, listen to this. Jesse Helms opposed interracial marriage and integration. He called the Civil Rights Act the single most dangerous piece of legislation ever introduced into the U.S. Senate. He supported the bill to end busing. He called the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill the University of Negroes and Communists. In 1982, he led a filibuster against the reauthorization of the Voting Rights Act. Of course, he lost it.
Yeah.
1983, he led a 16-day filibuster against the creation of the Martin Luther King holiday.
Yep.
He lost that. They gave him some takeoffs on tobacco here in North Carolina. So for a cigarette, he said it was okay. 1988, Helms opposed the Kennedy-Hatch AIDS bill, stating that there is not one single case of AIDS in this country that cannot be traced in origin to sodomy. 1988, Helms of, 1990, he ran the outrageous hands ad against Harvey Gantt, where he showed a pair of a white man, rolling up a paper that says, "I'm sorry, we can't hire you because a minority has to have the job." In 1990, Helms stayed away from an address to a joint session of Congress because Nelson Mandela was speaking. And then the major thing at all we did was he also tried to make Senator Carol Mosley Braun, the only African American in the Senate at the time, a Democrat, to cry.
Mm-hmm.
He said the incident occurred when Helms was and they walked onto the elevator that Senator Braun was on already, and he said, and he started singing Dixie. He said, "I wish I was in a land of cotton." And he looked at the Senator Hatch, who was also in the elevator, and said, "I'm going to make her cry. I'm going to sing Dixie until she cries."
Well, I mean,
and Senator Braun looked at him and said, "Senator Helms, your singing would make me cry if you sang the Rock of Ages." So this is the person that
he's praising, and he
praises
100 more of.
100 more of. And the last time a Republican said something similar to that, he was the Speaker of the House, and he said that if we would have kept that other moron down here in North Carolina, he's dead now. What's his name? The other moron. There's two real morons.
So many of them,
but they're two big morons. Jesse Helms and Strom Thurmond.
Strom, yeah.
Yeah, South Carolina. He said that if we had 100 more of them, we wouldn't be in this problem right now. Yeah, he promptly had to leave as Speaker of the House.
Uh-huh.
So, you know. Yeah, go ahead.
Besides the fact that, you know, it's just like, you know, when you get the really, really extreme, you know, homophobic gay bashing bullies that, you know, look around, they're the guy in the room, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You got to wonder with these guys because, you know, you remember as soon as Strom died, it was like, "What's that in your closet?"
People. Oh, you know? Gee.
So
how did she get there?
Yeah, you just got to wonder about extreme against something, you really got to wonder about their psychology there. But here's the thing about Helms that just drives me nuts.
Yes.
And this is going right back to the Koch brothers. People like this have no chance ever in civilized society, and everybody knows it.
Well, okay. Not anymore.
But when he was even running back and saying, I'm sitting there reading a whole article on him right now.
Right.
When he was running, even from the beginning in the 70s, he was so extreme that they couldn't fund him. And he was embarrassing the parties, right? So he couldn't get funding to run. So he set up a private funding arm just for him to fund his campaigns because he couldn't get money from the parties to run. Okay. And it had the, you know, North Carolina Congressional Club. That's what he said. But it was just, anyway, he made enough money that he could skirt the campaign laws, didn't have to take any money, but he could do all his campaigns because he was, of course, raising from all the private races so that he could get there. So he did all that. Okay. That's how he funded himself. But he said, even so, listen, all this private money he was getting from the tobacco farmers, from everybody else to go into power and all that, they said he squeaked by every election, barely.
Oh, yeah.
By a few thousand votes,
right.
Barely, every time. And first of all, he was outspending his opponents 30-1 in every election, and he was only his most over the top was 101,000 votes over the other opponent. But see, again, that shows he could not stand on his own. Even in the 70s, he was too extreme.
Right.
And money from private individuals like the Koch brothers put him in office and kept him there.
Yeah, well, that's why you'll do
barely,
that so much.
Because he couldn't even win, even as an established guy, he couldn't even get over 51%.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That tells you, though, that these guys don't really exist. They're propped up and manufactured by a couple of well-funded hate mongers. So we need to fight back, but we need to expose them. And I can't believe that Cruz did this. It's good that he did, because he just hopefully torpedoed his own Canadian vote of presence.
He doesn't care.
It's going down in the Great Lakes.
Right. He doesn't care about winning in 2016. He cares about setting himself up as
the leader of the party.
The leader in the Senate.
Right.
Because Dipso might not win the next time around McConnell. And McConnell's not going to run again.
Hey,
so he wants to be chair.
The emperor of the Sith Lords.
And yes, the Sith Lords.
He is a creepy-looking, watery-looking dude.
He is.
Like
we have somebody on the phone right here. And hello, who's calling?
Hey, Michael, it's Matt Newton.
Matt Newton, how are you?
We mentioned
you
earlier.
I'm doing good.
Did your ears burn?
Yeah, well, we were talking about you earlier. Your ears must have been burning.
I caught the tail end of Michael, and I missed. I think I missed most of it. Catch me up.
Okay. Well, we just had talked about the council. We were talking about a lot of things with city government, but we had talked about the council and asked him questions, and he was explaining that they are indeed trying to fix things, but they are hobbled by state, oversight, intervention, holding of the reins. So he said they were going to have to do limited.
Especially now because the Republicans told them they don't want to get
that's
that
what he was saying.
Away, right.
They said that they had to be careful about things, and things like subpoena power were being nixed from the state level, saying we will not grant you that ability. So they were trying to find ways to be transparent with limited resources.
And he did like the suggestion that I said that where – one of the things that needed to be done was to make sure that it was more transparent, that the information that the police department received should be the exact information that the CRB receives without any redacting, so they know at least what actually happened from the policemen themselves. So he was
full-fledged internal affair files handed over to the Citizens Review Board so that they can make a fully informed decision.
Right.
I think that's precisely what the coalition groups who have been advocating for Citizens Review Board reform have been asking for. I'm puzzled by the state intervention on the subpoena level. I did catch on the tail end comments pertaining to New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Philadelphia, cities that have subpoena power, and the fact that these seemingly are all in blue states.
They're all blue states.
And I wanted to comment on that. That's not true. And the reason I say that is because and I ask everyone who's listening, jump on the internet. Do a quick search of this. You'll find Philadelphia is in Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvania is a red state. They're not that far different from North Carolina, unfortunately, right now. They have a Republican governor, and they have a legislature, both the House of Representatives and the Senate, that is controlled by Republicans. Yet they have subpoena power within their Citizens Review Board in Philadelphia.
Subpoena power before, that's the first time it's been that way in 25 years in Philadelphia. So they are Pennsylvania. So they had that subpoena power long before these morons got in office. So I think that's an explanation. That just didn't happen in Pennsylvania. If you look on the internet, I'm sure it's going to see, you'll see that they had this long time ago.
Like our civil service board. It's like our civil service board in Charlotte that has subpoena power. And I think under the circumstances, we're not talking about, much like the airport, we're not talking about the Raleigh coming in and stripping our civil service board of its subpoena power. And I guess it's the inconsistencies that drive someone like me who does a lot of the background and digs for facts nuts.
Matt, what you were saying, what I'm saying is that when you looked on the internet about Pennsylvania, did it indicate when that civil service board got all their power? Because I'm sure it wasn't in the last couple of years, because since the legislature went that way, because they never were that way. This is the first time in about 25 years that they went Republican, and I'm sure they would not get it now. But does it say when they got that subpoena power?
I think the question the way I look at it in from my legal, you know, background and training, it's a question where we have to ask whether or not the boards by themselves are able to exist with the authority of Raleigh and our state legislature. And then at that point, we have to ask, well, what is the extent of micromanagement? And under the circumstances, there's absolutely no doubt that there's the authority granted by the state legislature and state law to not just have these boards, but to also have the boards have subpoena power. And this is written in state law. And this is the catch, right? And this is where a particular statute, if you go on crbreform.com, you can pull it up. A particular statute specifically says, so long as you have the consent of a city council and you also have the consent of the city manager. The idea, and certainly a distinction can be made between, say, the airport, Eastland Mall, even Panther Stadium, et cetera, where approval is necessary. But to say that that's the case here, I think is a point to be clarified, and I suppose that's probably a point of difference of opinion for a lot of folks.
Well, yeah, I would say, but what I don't understand in the law, if it says you have to have the consent of the city council and the city manager, that's ludicrous. The city manager works for the city council, so why even have his name in it?
Sure, and I don't dispute that at all. But it is the letter of the law, is my point. And this is that granted happened before Raleigh and our current state legislature took office. However, it's still the law, and it's something that doesn't prevent our current city council from acting and giving the power to the Citizens Review Board if they choose to use it. But giving them that power right now, just in case they choose to use it, and the only way that can be changed is if the legislature were to draft a new law entirely. But that's not something that would prevent our current city council members from enacting that power within the Citizens Review Board now.
Okay, but don't you think if the legislature would enact the law, if something like this came up,
do I think they would?
I
don't think they would, because in that respect, they would thereby we would be talking about a complete stripping of subpoena power for administrative agencies across the entire state, administrative agencies that are associated with city governments and municipalities.
Okay.
Here's a question for you. Since you're more lawyerese than I, and I don't, you know, know these things, but I go by the basis of I just think, you know, transparency in government is better. I think that when the people know what's going on, everything works better. It eliminates fear and misunderstanding and all that secrecy breeds, because even if it works correctly, it can have the appearance of not working correctly when there's secret. And my thing was, I don't know about all the laws, and I haven't read them all extensively, but in the Declaration of Independence itself, there is something that America is founded upon, because we were supposed to be the, you know, rebuttal to empires. And the opposite of the divine right of the kings of that time was something that we created, and it was called the consent of the governed.
Mm-hmm.
And it says the legitimacy and the moral right of a government shall only exist and be justified and legal if it is for the consent of the governed. And that, right?
And that ain't happening.
So my point is, though, if that is the very basis of our entire country and the way it is governed, then why shouldn't it be the consent of the people, like on this board? I mean, it should be a citizens' review board. It is not a council's review board. It isn't the mayor's review. It isn't the governor. It isn't the, you know, state legislature. It is a citizen's.
I think that needs to be brought up. That exact passage, Matt, needs to be brought up at a meeting.
I agree with you entirely. The Citizens Review Board, and we should be assured of the review board being a reflection of our community.
Right.
And we are completely deprived of the opportunity to know who's on the board right now, know what they're doing without the transparency that I think Tom, you would suggest is something guaranteed by the Declaration of Independence. And that's something else that I would hope, and certainly Michael, myself, and I think just about everybody on city council and within the city manager's office are on board with the idea that there needs to be a centralized hub of information that people can access readily at their fingertips to find out who's on the board, what that board's doing, potentially the decisions that the board will be making in the future, you know, the cases coming in. And also some medium where folks can learn about the options maybe available to them as well. And so we've suggested there being a centralized website. We suggested that there be information given to anyone who files a complaint with the city, with the police department, or the city through the Community Relations Committee, as well as the CRB, the Citizens Review Board themselves, being able through either their own action or through the action of a staff member to review every complaint that is filed with the police department or the Community Relations Committee. That's something that I don't think that all the players here, we're not at an impasse there. As far as that's concerned, it's a matter of when and not necessarily if.
Okay.
And
well, that's kind of good news then.
I'd like to read a little bit of something here that I just happen to have my liberal stained fingers on. And it says here, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving just powers from the consent of the government, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizations, its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness." Now, we are not a democracy. We are a representative republic. That means the people who we put in office, we put to best represent us. So now what they're saying, the other side, the elected officials, since you elected us, you entrusted me to make sure that your unalienable rights are protected. And when they are not, you get rid of me through the ballot box. So, Mr. Newt, is that the bottom line?
I would think so. And granted, you want to make fully, and I want to take an opportunity to congratulate everyone, the strong Democratic candidates moving on to general elections. Also, extend my condolences and my hopes for future successful campaigns to those who aren't moving on. But I think you hit the nail on the head, Michael. At the end of the day, it's upon us to make sure that the right folks are in office to represent us. And certainly you have moneyed interest, the Koch brothers, Alec, et cetera, that will try to buy elections. And we need to be a very informed populace so we don't let that happen. And we're seeing through voter ID laws right now a further erosion of voting, you know, our ability to get the best candidates elected. And until we march on the ballot box and see to it that we have the candidates to turn the tide, it will continue happening. So there's no doubt about it. We hold our power within our vote, and we need to do everything we can to make sure that we're not just implementing our right to vote, but we're doing it in a very educated, wise fashion.
Well, the other thing is that when you have less than 6% of the voters in a city turn out during a primary election, which is the most important part of an election, because after the primary is over, you got what you got.
Mm-hmm. That's the only time you can choose.
The only time you can choose is during the primary. And choosing not to vote is worse than choosing the wrong person because you didn't vote in the primary.
Well, you know, and to be that, just cold-hearted person, in a way, you know, saying 6% of the people showed up when things aren't changing on things like the Citizens Review Board, it is directly their fault. They got what they didn't show up for. Right? I mean, they are the cult that's still unchanged. I mean, that's why things aren't changing for the better. People aren't showing up.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. But then I am sure it wouldn't happen. But let me diverge first. Michael Barnes was saying that there are a lot of things that people, that they're just fed up. They don't think they have the power anymore. Well, today people have more power because we have television. We have the internet. We got pods. We got
24-hour news.
24-hour news. Now, you could choose to listen, or you can choose not to listen. And it's just like my youngest grandson. He was doing good, and he got two yellow faces last week. And I said, if you get another yellow face, I am coming up to the school to see your teacher. And he cried. Oh, he carried on. So this week was fine. He got green, 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 green. And yesterday, when my wife picked him up.
That's the answer, Mike. We need you at every home saying, if you don't show up at the ballot box, I'm coming to work.
Well, that's what Obama did with the cruises and the airfare ferry over in the Mediterranean. But he got a yellow face, so I'm going up there Tuesday. He was crying all night. Now, his daddy could go. His daddy works at night. So so it happens that my daughter, she thinks she's my mother. My daughter was working. She got up late, so we pick them up every day. The thing is that when you have to be in that position where you have to be forced to do something that's freely, it doesn't cost anything to vote. They had 2 weeks. Now they're going to have less time because the legislature is cutting it back. Now we will hear all these people who did not even vote claim foul. And I am sick of it. I'm tired of hearing these people claim foul when they didn't go out to vote. Now, I know that's not the case with people who you're talking with every single day, Matt. I hope it's not. But the problem is only 6%, less than 6% sense came out and voted. So what do they expect? I mean, this is a major question. What do they want? Blood from a stone? I mean, am I right?
I wish more people understood how the system works to benefit them directly, and how they're not getting benefited directly from a federal level as much as they are on a local level, and how
Absolutely.
Important. Because let's face it, if you ask someone when the important election years are, for most people, it's not the odd years. It's not the years
right.
that we are electing school board officials or city council members. And maybe that's where a disconnect is.
Right. You're absolutely correct. You know, I mean, some people only know it's time to vote if the Olympics are going on.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Give me a break. Give me a break. Now, you, when just curious, I don't know if it's even the right approach. Your clients, when you speak to your clients, do you ever ask them, are you registered to vote? Or is that something you think you should do or even talk about?
I surreptitiously kind of push them in the right direction. I do because of my involvement. I do strike up conversations every now and then with clients regarding politics and you know, political philosophy.
Okay, well, you know, even if you didn't even talk about political philosophy that you're interested in, the mere fact could come in a conversation, are you registered to vote? Because I'll bet you a lot of times, if they voted one way or another, that might have helped them with their problem.
Well, a lot of times you can solve something before it's a problem, just
That's
by
right.
participating.
Right. Absolutely. So, we are bound from the moment we're born to the moment we die in the political forum.
Yeah.
From the moment we're born to the moment we die. You might be born in the backseat of a car, but you might be buried in a cardboard box because you didn't participate.
Yeah, that's what I've never understood. And, you know, we've fought years trying to get voter awareness and things up and all, but I don't understand the lack of engagement. You know, people who are apathetic. Because I hear this all the time. Like, you know, even one, you know, my wife is the queen of, I don't want to hear any of that junk. I don't like all this yammering voices. I don't like the, you know, politics. I don't understand it. So I'm just going to tune out. And, you know, it's one thing to just say, like, okay, turn off, you know, the news channel.
Yeah, but she votes, though.
No, but she does.
So, I mean.
But the difference is some people don't pay attention at all. And I've never understood that. And they act as if it's something else way off over there across the country. And it doesn't affect them. And I've heard people literally say, well, I don't care. I'm just not going to say because it doesn't affect me. It doesn't bother me. I don't. It is you. I mean, that's the one thing about this country that's great. It's like the politics, the people are the politics.
Right.
And everything that goes on affects you every single day. And if you don't participate, you're just throwing your own life away. I don't get that. As if it's something disconnected somehow.
Matthew, the people, the last meeting we had that I was at with you, the city council, they should have had 2,000 people there. If 2,000 people were there at any one city council meeting where they had to have people in the hallways and in the smaller rooms,
they would have outnumbered out.
That could not change some way of having this whole thing delivered.
It
doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's no question about it. I have spoken to representatives before, and they have told me the influence depending upon the position as well. But they have expressed to me the gravity of having people actually there that they can see, real tangible folks that are advocating for a particular position. Now, granted, if you're the governor or if you're a mayor, an at-large, certainly it's that much more compelling. But there's no doubt about it. And I think that we have, granted, weeks ago, it would have been nice to have a couple more folks there. But I think we've made small victories on both a local and a statewide level because of that involvement.
We brought awareness to it and got people talking about it at the very least. I mean, because we've had week after week representatives suddenly appearing and they all want to talk about it now.
Right.
It's different than it's been.
Can you stay on with us, Matt? Because I have another call. I want you to stay on. Hold on.
Absolutely.
Hello, caller. Who's this? Hello, caller.
Lee Sowers.
Lee Sowers, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing? How are you doing, Michael?
I am doing fine. Just for the people who are listening here, could you introduce yourself for everybody?
Yeah, sure. I'm Lee Sowers. I was at the council meeting a couple weeks ago with Matt, and I appreciate everything that Matt's been doing and bringing this issue to light.
And we would just mention it to Matt that, you know, if I was there with you and if we had people out in the hallways and out in the outside the building and in all the rooms upstairs who were listening to that, that there was no way that I can see that these people would not have sat on their dust and not got off a dime. I mean, the thing is, this is our representatives. And if we go speak to these representatives, they are going to do something. Every time you hear some of these people on the radio or on television, what are they saying? Well, my representatives are voting 30-70 against going into Syria. They're voting 56. My people are voting 56-20 against not going into Syria. So it's the people that make their mark. The people need to know, like you, Lee.
Yeah, that's right. You have to speak up in order for issues to be addressed. And if you don't speak up, if you don't say that you see a problem and a problem should be addressed, then how can you expect your representatives at any level to
you know, and these are our representatives. You're absolutely right. We put them there. Whether you actually voted for that particular person or not, you were still part of the process that put that person there. And if you don't want to be part of the process, well, that's why you don't come to vote in the primary. Because if you don't vote in the primary, you get what you get. I mean, it's as simple as that. This isn't a scientist. This is not, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. If you don't vote in the primary, you get what you get. And then some people say, well, none of them are any good. Well, there's always somebody better than all of them up there. There's always, yes, we're always voting for the worst out of a worst lot. That's what everybody always says. Nothing's going to change anyway. Well, that's not exactly true.
Hey, you never know. You might get a rich, super smart, young whippersnapper of a lawyer. I'm just saying.
No, really?
Yeah. I mean, there was this guy that come to him every once in a while that I couldn't quite figure out from his pictures because he looks, you know, younger than my children.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the heck? The lawyer looked like a child. Then I realized what happened. So
yeah.
I read his bio, and the guy's graduated from high school and college before, you know, most kids
except
even get out of high school. So it's unclear to me why he looks so young in the photo.
Yeah, that's true.
But we need maybe some smart whippersnappers like that.
Well, we also
there's always a better choice.
There's always a better choice. Mr. Newton, you still with us, right?
I am, yes. I hear that gentleman got a little salt and pepper coming in on the side too. And it's probably for the best.
I think
with a lot of
that in order to make
you can sell yourself a little bit.
Right. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I think a snowball effect is created, too, with a lack of participation. Let's face it, the way you overcome big money interest and the buying of elections is through participation. And the lack of participation creates a system where you can have voting rights stripped, where you can have the redistricting or the rewriting of districts in such a fashion to further disenfranchised. And it's not until, and I hope that people do take a much more active role and interest in what's going on, especially within our state, and start to, as I was saying before, turn that tide back and reinstill not just fairness but also opportunity.
Well,
you guys are doing a wonderful job too, spreading the word, by the way.
Well, we're trying.
We're trying to do our part.
Yeah, Lee, what do you think about that, Lee?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with everything that Matt just said. I agree with everything that you and Thomas said earlier, too, is you specifically, if you don't participate, I mean, I've heard so many people complaining about every level of government. And if you don't participate, if you don't go out and vote, then how can you burden me with your complaints? You know, I mean, why do you feel like you have the right to even do that if you don't even have a right, which is free? I mean, like you said, it's free. It doesn't cost you anything. It's just a matter of going out and exercising that.
And realistically, an elected official, you know, this is something that was thought up recently. Franklin Delano Roosevelt said that. He says, make me do this. And he wasn't talking to his dog or his wife, Eleanor. He was saying, you want Social Security? Make me do it.
Yeah.
And this is the thing that we were talking about just before with Michael Barnes, that the whole way we participate through this voting process is completely fraudulent, because we need to vote for the people that help us directly. And that is our city council people, our board of education, our county commissioners. Well, first people need to be the judges.
Yeah, don't forget the ones who
the judges are the most important people in any city or county, in any state. And then go down the list, which be towards the federal side of the vote, and have the president of the United States as the last person to vote.
And imagine how powerful a president would be if he had 50 states full of counties and cities that were chosen and represented everything that you valued. I mean, he would be the most powerful president in history.
I spoke, and there was, when I left, I left at 3:30. I was at the polling booths starting at 10:30. There was 68 people that voted. Two of the people told me
68.
Two of the people told me they only voted for the mayor because they didn't know the rest. And they guessed at that because they weren't paying. All they knew was Cannon. They didn't know anybody else. I mean, this is disgraceful. I can't even think of words except what the old, what they say on Battlestar Galactica. This is fracking impossible. Ludicrous.
Maybe the answer truly is commercialism, Mike, because everybody knows Coke and Pepsi. Everybody knows, you know, McDonald's and Burger King. Maybe we could just label our candidates better. Have some spiffy suits with some great colors. Some nice scheme of design.
Does that work, Lee? Does that work for you? Have them bright stars, wear yellow and red, and so they stand out.
The guy that looks like Captain America. You know,
I mean, well, what would you suggest? You are a voter.
I mean, I do my research. I mean, I do have a busy life. I think Thomas brought this up, and everybody does. My life may not be as busy as some others because my kids are all grown, and I only have one job. So, I'm able to, spend 10 or 15 minutes on the Internet. The information is available. Like you alluded to, not everything that you read on the Internet is true, but there are reputable websites out there, local media out there, and just kind of pay attention. Pay attention at this lowest level first and start participating. I mean, a 6% turnout, that is unacceptable. It truly is unacceptable. Everybody needs to take the responsibility. As an individual, if you really care about your level of government, your system of government, embrace it at the lowest level. That's where you have the loudest voice. I'm on the board of my HOA, and I don't have participation with 150 units in my HOA. I have a hard time doing that. And if I hear the complaints, but I don't see the participation. So I mean, even at that level, if you can't take the time to participate there, then it's unfortunate.
I feel your pain. I had over 800 homes, in our board. We're a very large community, but we at times could not even get people to show up at meetings, couldn't even get quorums or votes. And you're talking about, out of 100-something homes, you would have things like, there are 12 people here, or whatever. You're like, are you kidding me?
You're financially invested in that community as well, and you can't participate there? And it's unfortunate that our lives are so busy.
Matt, you got
there's plenty of opportunities too. All you need to do is flip through the phone book or jump on the internet if you have that as an option. Contact the local board of elections; they're looking for folks all the time. Staff polling locations, and that's from an objective, independent standpoint. If you don't want to pick a side. If you do, there are plenty of ways of getting involved. Political party auxiliary groups, the Democratic Party, is having a picnic tomorrow between 11 and 3 o'clock at Nevin Park, which is off Statesville Road. I'll be there, and I'm sure that there are opportunities on the other side. But the fact is it's not as though if you look, it's not as though you're going to have much difficulty finding ways of getting involved involved in participating. We have county, the Democratic Party is a county party with the Get Out the Vote effort, and I would just encourage everybody to ensure that the right candidates are elected and your voice is heard and participate, right? Do more. We can all do more than just going and filing, punching our ballot. And we all have that opportunity.
Well, this is not my first rodeo, and I want to tell you, some of you hate me to bring this up, but I have to bring it up because there are people, and I don't know if this is a Southern thing. I mean, I my community, East Elmhurst, New York, when I was there, and East Elmhurst is larger than Charlotte, amount of people, 93% registered. 95% voting. During primaries, 70% voting. So what's all 70% of over 600,000 people? What is the thing? Is this something that's here? Now, it's probably all over the whole country, but the thing is that the district leaders got people, made them involved. Stop them on the street. What are you doing? Why aren't you inside? We're having meetings. The district leader would stand outside for 10 or 15 minutes before the meeting and grab people off the street. I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican. Come inside the meeting. This is helping you. So the thing is that, but of course, the district leader got paid $50,000. Now, we have a problem here because we don't want to pay people. they give them $13,000 and send them on their way, and they're supposed to take care of every single Tom, Dick, and Harry in their district. I mean, we're the 17th largest city in the country, and we can't afford to pay an elected official. And if we paid people the money that they would get in other major cities, we would get fabulous people to run for office. But you can't be Mayberry and act like you're New York.
I don't know that anybody in Charlotte is serving on city council for the money. That's an excellent point. Very excellent point.
I mean, what we need with this state, and I think the state wants to keep us low because I spoke to Secretary Fox about this when he was mayor here, and he says, I'm trying to align people that will help us get in that position. But hey, we lost the legislature and the Senate. So they kissed that goodbye, because that ain't going to happen as long as there's a Republican legislature. Because then they wouldn't be able to control every single aspect of our entire life, from the board to the council to the county commission up until the state and the Senate and the governorship. Now, when you're individual little municipalities, they can control it. So before we even do that, which is what needs to be done here, the 17th largest city, we need to have a city council and a county commission combined with 15 members and a city council president or a mayor pro tem, whatever. But a mayor who controls everything so we can hire and fire him or her. And when things are consolidated, I believe we will be able to pick who we can blame and hang by the thumb. Now, city council blames the county commission blames city council, and they both blame the Board of Education. We should have nothing to do with anything.
And nothing gets changed.
Lee, what do you think?
Yeah, there's a shell game going on in there. That works to the benefit of the people that represent us, obviously, because there's no accountability. And of course, then, you know, going back to the voter turnout, if there's no voter turnout, then there's also no accountability. So, simplified government, smaller government, yes. I mean, the streamline everything. That seems to make more sense, but. How are you going to accomplish that? Now we do have a county commission, a city council, and the city council is contained completely in the county, but some other cities are also in the county. That, you know, how are you going to achieve that? I mean, you have to deal with Matthews, Huntersville, you know, other cities. So that's going to take a team effort, and we're so divided right now we can't. We can't pretty much agree whether the sky is blue anymore.
Many
of our representatives have to work in a part-time capacity, they should be afforded the liberty of a full-time job. Michael Barnes, a moment ago, he was talking about working in his law firm, and he does a wonderful job as an attorney, and he has an excellent, pristine reputation. But could you imagine having someone of Michael's intellect actually working in a full-time capacity for us as our representative? And that's just it.
Yeah, absolutely correct. I mean, that would be awesome. And the thing is that, but we need to pay these people. We can't give them dog food money. I mean, and then expect them to act like the president of the United States. I mean, it's just completely, you know, it's like having a club and putting people in as club members and putting some people in as the treasurer and some people as the vice chair. That's all it is. This is not Mayberry, where the sheriff walks around without a gun with a fishing rod over his shoulder. I mean,
yeah.
It's completely ludicrous.
Well, Mayberry seemed to work, though. I like watching that show, you know. Everything seemed to, you know, everybody seemed to get along, so maybe, who knows? I'm being facetious there, but.
There was only 20 people in town, Lee. They only had 20 people in that whole place.
Right. Well, I mean, at our voter turnout, I mean, we basically only have, you know, 6% representing Charlotte. So, I mean, we're talking about the same thing. If you put it in perspective.
That's absolutely correct. You are absolutely right.
In this analogy, our voting population is OP.
That's right. That's it. You're right. This is Mayberry.
No wonder we're screwed.
Absolutely correct. No wonder things can't change. I mean, and did you ever notice it's the same people running all the time?
Yep.
Yeah.
Nobody else.
Yeah. That's I've talked to a couple. I'm sorry, Thomas. I've talked to a couple thousand people in the past couple months, and yeah, that's kind of been a consensus as well. That there's some professionals on council. Maybe
right.
That should change.
Well, you know, what's the old saying? Hey, somebody's got to do it.
Right.
We only got 6% vote. And they don't want to do it, so they vote for these people. I mean, it's not their problem. It's
right.
Not that we want to persecute the police with a CRV, a CRB that has a subpoena problem. It ain't the police's fault. The police are doing wrong here. I mean, you can't go into a lion's den and think you're going to come out unless you're Daniel. I mean, it ain't going to happen.
Like we said before, if they had transparency, it helps everyone. It helps the police.
Absolutely.
It helps the citizen. It reinforces the entire system that people have faith in. And
yeah.
That's one of the problems today. A lot of times people say they don't vote because it's all corrupt. But that perception is what's driving that.
Well, see, they make it corrupt and I vote.
Exactly. It's a
self-fulfilling prophecy.
It's like,
correct.
I'm getting abused.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you feel like the doctor. You go to the doctor, when I lift up my arm like this, it hurts. Well, don't lift up your arm like that.
The city manager's office released a report a few days ago.
Yeah.
In that report, they included a survey of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg police department satisfaction. And there was an independent agency that had phoned 683 people. And they found that the satisfaction rate is 76%. Granted, that sounds good at first blush, but, you know, on the flip side, you're talking about 24% of those people that are dissatisfied with the police department. And it's not to say the police department aren't doing a good job. It's the perception. And the bottom line here is that when you adjust that for the overall population, you're talking about a number in excess of 180,000 people. And I believe that's a problem. And ensuring that the Citizens Review Board has more power to exercise if it needs to, not to say that it does, but if and when it needs to, based upon the decision-making of the members themselves, I think is a good thing, and it reinstills that trust for that 180,000-plus people.
Well, you know, you mentioned, what was the percentage of the people? They said that they would trust. What percentage is that? Or 683, what percentage is that?
24%.
It was 600. 76%? Well, that's about the same amount they voted.
653.
Is that equal to the same amount of people that voted in the primary? So all the people.
No.
Yeah, I think it's a little bigger.
It was lower than that. But out of those 600 and some odd that were called, how many actually had any interaction with the police department? Also, some people may never have dealt with a police officer. So yeah, okay, I'm happy with it because I haven't experienced anything otherwise. You know, they seem to be there when I'm ready.
It's a very small sample size. I believe the city manager, and for anyone who's interested, at 12 o'clock this coming Monday, the city manager will be in room CH14 at the government center giving his quarterly report. And this is something that will be included in that quarterly report. And I'm sure it's something that we're going to hear the following Monday on the 23rd at 11:45. The council manager committee will be meeting, and the task force will be coming back and giving its recommendations. Its recommendations after the stakeholder process has been completed, and I would be willing to bet that this is information that we will see in that as well. But yeah, it's a small sample size, but given the sample size, I think that the information as well is important and is clear. 24%, at least of those people, even though we don't have more specifics on who they are, 24% of those folks don't believe the police department is doing a good job, regardless of whether they are or not. And
right.
I believe that's a problem.
Yeah, that's true. That's pretty high. That's a pretty high percentage.
A quarter
of the people don't trust the police department.
Well, see, then they were reversed and said, well, that's only a quarter of people we interviewed.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
So the thing is that, what would you rather have, 25 cents or 75 cents? Oh, I think I'd rather have 25 cents. So, statistics are statistics, but if people don't see that there's a way that they can change this, we'll be talking about this again next year.
Right.
And the only way they can change it is by participation, coming down to the meeting.
Oh,
hey,
exactly.
There has to be 1,000 people that could come down on a evening for a couple of hours to listen to their city council, the people that they voted for. There's got to be. I mean, that's nonsense.
And just to show you people power, if we could get a couple thousand people in that room, we would have more concentrated membership power than all of LA nationwide.
But that's right. We were talking about statistics before. Alec, the American Legislative Exchange Council, we were talking about them. They're feeding all these Republican right-wing legislatures in all the states. They only have 483 people on there with Facebook.
Well, they only have like 400
followers.
No, they only have 200 some followers, but they have 2,100 members is what they claim is their total membership.
Come on. So, it won't even take that.
Yeah, they've written the laws for 33 states.
So, that's what we need to do. And I think you got any last closing things, Matt, you'd like to say?
Oh, well, sure. Please jump on crbreform.com. If you want to learn more about me, you can jump on my law firm's website, Newton Arroyo, NewtonArroyo, law.com. Jump on crbreform.com, learn more about reforming the Citizens Review Board. Come on out next Monday the 23rd. At 11:45 a.m., the Council Manager Committee will be meeting. That's going to be at the Government Center. And then that night, I might have an opportunity, we'll see, to speak in front of City Council again at 6 p.m. So get involved. Also, now that we're in the election season, as we were saying before, please read about the candidates and get involved yourself. You can come on out to Nevin Park tomorrow between 11 and 3 for the auxiliary committee meetings of the Democratic Party. We're talking about the African American Caucus, the Democratic Women, the Young Dems, Hispanic Democrats. Meet folks, get involved. Also, learn more about independent candidates. Lee, you're running as an independent, right?
Yes, I'm trying to gain ballot access at this point.
You didn't tell us that, Lee.
So,
why didn't you mention that before, Lee? We could have
Again. Yeah, the CRB. That's an important topic, and I think we should stay focused on that. But I'm trying to gain ballot access. I mean, I'll speak briefly. I think you have a minute left. But Lee Sowers, I'm running as an independent. I have to get 3,001 signatures of registered voters in District 1. So I'm running, trying to run in District 1 to gain ballot access. Currently in District 1, as well as Districts 4, 5, and 6, there's only one candidate that you have a choice for.
I believe there's also an independent trying to gain ballot access for District 4. So these are some things that this information's out on the internet. If you're interested, do some research. But if you're interested in signing my petition, if you're listening and you live in District 1, I have a website, leesowers.wix.com/citycouncil. That's leesowers.wix.com/city-council. You can also reach me by telephone at 704-535-6659.
And that is it for this Friday.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. When the news is all bad, when you're sour and blue, when you start to get mad, you should do what I do. Tell yourself how lucky you are. When the fates are unkind, when your life's going wrong, when you're limping along and get kicked from behind, tell yourself how lucky you are. Why do you cry a cloudy sky, an empty purse, a crazy universe? My philosophy is simply things could be worse. So be happy you're here. Think of life as a thrill. And if worse comes to worse, as we all know it will, thank your lucky star you've gotten this far. And tell yourself how lucky you are. How lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky you are.